Four, three, two, one. Yeah! And we're live, gentlemen. What's up? What's up, boys?
What's going
good
on,
to see
man.
You again. What's
yeah,
happening?
Happy to be here, man.
Happy to have you here,
yeah,
man.
Thanks.
You are the only guy right now that I know of that is fighting at the highest level in three combat sports.
Correct.
MMA, Muay Thai, and kickboxing. That's fucking crazy.
Thanks, man.
How do you keep your head together?
I don't know. Like, last time warming up in Rome, actually, was the first time, like, warming up for a kickboxing fight. I threw a spinning back elbow. I was like, I better not do that shit.
Yeah, spinning back elbows, no bueno in a kickbox. You could do a spinning back fist, though, right?
I did, which I landed two of them in my last fight.
Do you see what's happening lately where a lot of guys are hitting foreheads with their arms and snapping their arm? Yeah. Paige did it. Who else did it recently? Paul Felder did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple guys have done it.
Yeah.
They spin and you catch foreheads, and that is not a good combination.
Yeah, I feel like the kickboxing glove protects you a little bit more than the MMA glove probably does.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 4 ounce, 10 ounce, there's a little bit of cushion there that might protect you a little more.
Yeah.
It's still something that, you know, when I first started fighting kickboxing, he was like, I don't know, man, like, be careful with it, because I would, like, kind of catch, like, the middle of my arm.
Right.
So it's a little different than the spinning elbow, which is, in my opinion, a lot more safer to throw.
Now, what happens if you throw a spinning back fist in kickboxing and you really kind of catch them with, like, the meat above the elbow?
It's illegal.
It's legal or
no?
Ill?
It's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah. You're only
allowed.
But
what about here?
No. You have to, whether it's Glory, mm-hmm, or it's K1 or it's Bellator, it has to be with the back knuckle, back of the pad of the glove.
It can't be the side?
It cannot be a hammer fist. That is illegal.
Ooh, that's weird.
You'll get a point deducted. And if you cause more damage, then you might go get DQ'd.
Yeah, when Sato knocked out Joe in that Bellator fight, if you watch it, it was a hammer fist. And there was a lot of talk about whether it was legal or illegal. But it wasn't a back fist. It was a hammer fist.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's not
interesting.
Yeah, it's illegal per ISKA and most governing bodies.
So in when MMA, you knocked out Joe Schilling
in that kickboxing fight when they first fought.
So because they spun,
mm-hmm,
and because he landed with the back of the hand or the side of the hand, it's actually illegal.
It's considered a foul. Yeah.
Did anybody bring it up?
They mentioned it, but I think at that time Joe had come off of that Simon situation with Lion Fight, and he was like, move on, you know. I got knocked out. It is what it is, you know. So he didn't make a big deal about it.
That dude hits fucking hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Joe's so reckless. Mm. He's so aggressive, you know. Like, he has these moments of, like, extreme emotion where he just and that dude, he wanted to knock that dude out so bad after he got knocked out in the MMA fight.
Yeah.
He wanted to knock him out. Mm-hmm. In his rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I think it's what you saw with Cody this weekend, too.
Yeah.
Just too much emotion in one fight, you know?
Yeah, man. We were talking about that and watching the replays. Like, you could see in his face that every shot he was trying to knock him out with.
As soon as I saw him walk out. He looked okay walking out. As soon as, like, the bell rang, I was like, he just did it. He looked a little stiff.
Yeah.
You know, and I was hoping, like, he would shake it off, get in the rhythm, like, land a couple jabs, just like, you know, we were working on when I sparred with him a couple times leading up to the TJ fight.
Mm-hmm.
I go up to Alpha Male to do my wrestling and a lot of my grappling. You know, they have so many 135, 145 pounders up there that, only an hour and a half away drive.
Right.
It only makes sense to go up there, you know,
sure,
and exchange knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as soon as I saw him walk out and started the fight, I was like, I hope he just shakes it off and, like, gets into his groove. Like, when he fought Dom, like, that was artwork. That was that was incredible. He just let him come to him, and I was hoping that was...
What was his game plan? Knock his fucking ass out, bro.
No. he wanted to use more wrestling, from what we were talking to Danny and all those guys about. He wanted to use more wrestling. And definitely,
he threw a lot of kicks.
Yeah. He wanted to kick a little bit as well, but he also wanted to just do the same thing to what he did to Dom.
Mm.
You know, just kind of, like, piece him up. And, I mean, considering the last fight, he almost finished him in the first round.
Right.
When they first fought, he was like, I can do this. I can finish this guy.
Well, I think he could finish anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
But he's got to go about it the right way.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going about it the right way initially with the kicks.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, even if these are just landing on the arms, mm-hmm, like, these are going to soften TJ up. These
definitely
are brutal. He was
definitely
throwing some brutal kicks. And it was a totally different thing. He was he was adding a whole different aspect to the fight that he did in the first fight.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't when he started throwing the kicks, I was like, yeah, there's the game plan. I see right. what I see what's going on. Beautiful. And then mm-hmm. when he pointed to the ground and he was like, yeah, see, you couldn't touch me. I'm like, oh, he's starting to get in his rhythm. Mm-hmm. But that's what I hate about immediate rematches after a knockout. It's just – it's still in your head. It's just the confidence level, the anger, the emotion. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Henry, 2-3 years between his fight with DJ where he got, you know, finished in the first round.
Right.
More fights, fighting some other people.
He was a different human this time around.
Absolutely. But if he right. had fought DJ the very next fight, who knows right. how that goes.
Right. But that would be hard to sell, no, right? Yeah. Unless Henry was yeah. the champion and DJ took the crown from him. This was the whole idea was that, you know, Cody had beat Dom. Cody was the champ.
Right.
And that Cody was defending the honor of Alpha Male and TJ yeah. was this snake in the grass they were going to put away. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the whole idea behind the Ultimate Fighter. And this, there was just so – I don't think there's ever been a fight other than maybe Ronda and Misha mm-hmm. that had more emotion, just yeah. more, you know
– bad blood behind yeah. it. Yeah.
The Ronda and the Misha thing might have been worse. So people don't remember how hated Ronda was after that Misha fight because she wouldn't shake Misha's hand.
Yeah.
Like Misha tried to shake her hand and Ronda was like, bitch.
Get out of here.
And just walked away from her. Yeah. And everybody's like, whoa. And like while I was interviewing her, it was just a boo. Like the whole audience was booing. Those emotional fights, they're so compelling to watch. But man, they're so fraught with peril for the fighters.
Mm. Absolutely. If you look at his face, this kid has 50 fights. He has 50 fights, amateur, Muay Thai, MMA, kickboxing, back to a junior. The only scars you're going to see on his face are from a fight where he fought Damian Early, yeah. whose brother had
That was a lion fight.
That was a lion fight.
I saw that fight.
Yeah.
I was very angry.
He was very
I
angry.
I wanted to put him away. I dropped him, what, twice, once?
Because Gaston was a rising star in lion fight at the time. And the family, the Earlys, the Chastains, and everything's cool now. But at the time, the parents were very aggressive online towards yeah. Gaston. They were like,
his parents were?
Yeah. They won't fight. Oh. Yeah, exactly. Gaston won't fight our boy. Well, one, you're not even in his weight class. You know. And then you know they said, oh, we can make the weight. So, okay, if you make the weight, we'll take the fight. Mm-hmm. And they made the weight. They made the weight. But it was the one, and I've said it since.
Well, it was Gabriel, the Eddie thing, too.
Eddie. And then,
Eddie who?
Eddie Abasolo, one of my teammates.
Oh, okay.
You know, we've been training together for, what, like 5 years now?
Yeah.
And what was the problem with them?
They fought. Damien and Eddie fought 155 pounds, which is what Eddie – they both fought at that weight thing. He wanted to come down to fight me. But Eddie landed an illegal elbow in the back of the neck. It wasn't – it didn't seem like it was that hard, but it ended the fight, and Eddie got DQ'd, and then they were just talking mad shit, saying, oh, you know, you did that on purpose. And, like, Eddie – if you meet Eddie, you'd be like, he's the coolest guy ever.
He's
like,
a smooth fighter, yeah. man.
Silky smooth. That's his nickname. Silky smooth.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
He seems so chill in there and just really knows how to pace himself and just extend his energy perfectly.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, really interesting fighter to watch. Yeah.
He's my favorite people to work with. Like,
yeah,
like
to train
just,
with?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's such an amazing human being. Now, and the best part is that Gaston hated him.
I hated Eddie.
Hated.
Why? I hated it. Eddie
was it
and
the
I
braids?
Didn't. No, this is pre-braids Eddie. So growing up as an amateur, Eddie started what, like 2 years after I did?
Yeah,
about 2 years after I did. And you know, I always like shake his hand and stuff like that when I saw him, but the camp that he was from, his coach hated me. Did not like me at all. Yeah.
And so Gaston was fighting in San Francisco, and it was the first time that Gaston ever got knocked out. And he got knocked out. Yeah. He was supposed to, you know, and Gaston at the time, locally in the Bay Area, he was the guy.
Yeah.
You know, the amateur kid. Yeah. He's a star. Everybody loves
18
him.
18 years old, beating everybody, fighting anybody in any weight class from, you know, 137 to 150. I'll fight anybody. Right. I didn't care. I was just trying to get the experience. The first 2 years of my junior career, the first year I fought as a junior, I beat pretty much everybody my age. And back then the rules were like, if you're under 16, you can't. If you're under 18, you're a junior.
You're gonna get me in trouble, man.
Yeah. So we just faked my
that happens
my birth certificate
so
yeah.
often.
Yeah.
That
so I was 18. So I was 18 2 years before that. I was 18.
Yeah. I had him fighting adults early.
Why do people do that? That's
nobody would fight him. He couldn't fight. He'd beat everybody junior.
Right.
So we said, okay. So we made him 18, and he fought, and he got knocked out. Just he cut too much weight for a fight, and you know, you go as you learn. He cut down to 37, and it was a little too much.
What was your walk around weight?
Well, the thing is, I was planning on fighting. So what was the camp that we were fighting? Maesh?
Yeah, Maesh.
Yeah. So we were supposed to fight at 142, which I was fine with. And at the time, I probably could have made 135, but the week of is like, hey, your opponent dropped out. His teammate will fight you, but he'll fight you at 137.
Oh.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that
going
five
from
five extra pounds is a lot.
But going from 140, yeah, exactly. I was like walking around 149.
Yeah.
Going like another 12 pounds at that age. I was like 18. I didn't do it right. I was just like, it just didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
So he got caught and
I was winning the fight.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's winning the fight, destroying. I mean, and again, this guy, I think he works at Walmart now. And that's not a bullshit. This is a great kid. Power right hand.
No
caught
disrespect
him.
To Walmart.
No disrespect. But he got caught, and in between rounds, I could see it. It was like a deer in headlight. He just, Gaston was on autopilot. He was winning, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So he gets caught, he gets dropped, and literally Eddie's camp was just swarmed the ring, screaming and yelling, Gaston's out.
Yeah. And I remember clearly seeing Eddie in that guy's corner, like, you know, just like, yeah. And like, he was just part of the camp doing what everybody, all his friends were doing. Yeah. And since then, I was like, nope.
That motherfucker.
I hate that guy. I did not like him.
We all hated the camp. We all hated Eddie.
And then one of my teammates fought Eddie.
Uh-huh.
Same thing. But he fought Brooks. Cut him right on top of the head. Brooks, he had to have staples and everything. And same thing. They were just like treating us like they were the shit. And I was like, fuck these guys, man.
Emotions involved in camps. I mean, it's such a wasted thing. It doesn't. It's definitely bad for the fighters because it creates this added element. Like, fighting is hard enough as it is. But when you add all this hate and disdain, the only thing it could potentially do is, if you don't have a good work ethic, which obviously you do, it'll get you up.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you remember when Buster Douglas fought Mike Tyson?
Mm-hmm.
When Buster Douglas was a 42-1 underdog, but everybody knew Buster had talent. But he was like a lazy guy.
Yeah.
Then his mom died. And when his mom died, he just made a decision. He was like, fuck this. You know, he was hurting. He was in pain. And he's like, I'm going to train like a wild animal for this fight.
Yeah.
I'm going to train like I've never trained before. I'm gonna train like a real world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out there jabbing and hooking off the jab. And everybody's like, what the fuck
is going on
right
now? Yeah.
Like, the combination that he knocked Tyson out with was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Never achieve those heights again.
Only fight I've ever bet on in my entire life was that fight.
Did you bet on Tyson?
Yeah.
bet the whole bank. But 500 to win, $50.
Yeah, exactly.
It's $53. Yeah.
Crazy.
But emotions are never good. I mean, that's like a rare time where emotions were good because it got a lazy guy to the gym to train like a real professional.
And the thing with Eddie is that, without question, Eddie is the glue that holds our team together. He is the best thing that ever happened to our gym.
Because he's like
crazy.
His ego. He doesn't like his ego. Is just like not. He'll just do whatever. He's like, hey, you want to work? You want to do this? What do you want to do? He's not. There's no like. We're both alpha males at CSA.
Right.
You know, like
yeah.
Oh, he's like, hey, what do you want to do, man? You want to run? You want to work?
Those are the guys that grow, man. The guys that grow are the guys
and
that
help
can just
people
chill.
Grow and help
yes,
people grow. And
yeah.
He's helped our team grow so much.
And when Eddie came to me, it basically, like we, like literally, same thing happened with Gaston. Is that because Gaston was a little prick when I met him too? But Eddie, he'll admit it. He was like, you know, he was just around the wrong people. I watched him fight in his last amateur fight, and I hated him, and I was rooting for him to lose. I was literally sitting in the back being a hater, going, oh, this is awesome. And he started losing a fight. He blew his knee out, and he started losing. And while the fight was happening, I started rooting for him, and I hated him. But his heart and his spirit was the first I ever saw it, one of the most talented kids I ever saw. He blew his knee out, blew his ACL, kept fighting through the whole fight. It was one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen. After the fight, I went back into the locker room. He was by himself, crying. His coach wasn't there.
His team left him.
Because
he was what, undefeated or
world
like,
champion,
world champion, amateur world champion. Like he had racked up a ton of fights, and you know the team, his team was behind him because he was winning. But then he loses against the guy that he had beaten before.
Yep.
And then his team was gone.
And I went back and I told him. I said, "Listen, I said this probably doesn't mean much to you." I said, but I want to tell you that I am more impressed with you in losing this fight and what I saw from you than in any time else that you showboated, you won, you destroyed people, the heart you displayed. You are one of the best fighters I have ever seen in my life. 3 months later, he hit me up, brought ice cream, came to CSA, and he said, hey, can I train here?
Brought ice cream.
I saw him walk in with his fucking ice cream, and I was like, what is going on right now?
Gaston.
Why is he here?
Gaston came to me.
No.
He did.
No.
And he said, if Eddie trains here, I'm leaving. He said, I'm gone.
How long did it take you to warm up to him?
We sparred once, and, you know, Kieran had a real talk with me. He's like, listen, man, I'm the head coach here, and, like, I'm your dad. Like, relax. I know what I'm doing. When have I failed you? You know, I'm telling you this, you know, if he's who we think he is or we thought he was, you know, like, I'll know and he'll leave. But you got to give him the opportunity.
And when he's saying that, he's telling the truth. I was his legal guardian at the time. When he threatened to leave, the first question out of my mouth was, are you going to leave the gym or are you going to leave my house because you live there too? So he was living with me. I said, so it's going to be weird if you're training somewhere else.
How old were you then?
15? I became his legal guardian.
When Eddie came, I was maybe 18. No, about 18.
Yeah, I became his parents moved back to Peru, and I became his legal guardian so he could finish school here in the U.S., and he came to live with me. And I put him into college all that.
Yeah, a year before that.
That's a tight relationship.
Yeah, a year before that, I was commuting. So I was training at Fairtex, Mountain View, at the time.
And I was coaching there.
And he was coaching there every couple of days. And then, you know, 2008 happened, South Korea, IFMA. He was the coach for the U.S. National Muay Thai team. And, you know, we just clicked. We were just like, you know, When I
met him at Fairtex, I was teaching, and I was hitting a heavy bag. He came walking up to me. He's like, he's 14, 15. He's got his picture on the front window at Fairtex Mountain View. So he's, you know, because he's a good-looking kid. He was a surfer and modeling and all that. So he walks up, and he rolls up his shorts next to me. He goes, who are you, man? And I'm like, oh, I'm Kieran. He goes, oh, okay. He goes, what do you do here? I was like, I teach. He goes, I never see you here before. Johnson's my coach. He starts kicking the bag. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. All right, good to know. So then Johnson couldn't coach the national team in 2008 in Korea. So as a Fairtex coach, they asked me if I wanted to go. I said, yeah. So I get onto the plane on my way to Korea for the World Championships, and I see this
little... In the connection. Right?
At the connection.
Yeah, the flight. Connection, I was like, why is he here?
And I see this and I see this little fuck, and I'm like, oh, God, I hate this kid. I couldn't stand him. And so we get there, and I'm like, he's going to get murdered, and I'm happy. I'm glad he's going to get murdered. He's going to learn a lesson. He needs a valuable lesson.
I didn't cut weight at the time, and I was fighting the returning two-time gold medalist at IFMA on my first ever – that was my first
– grown-ass man. He made his amateur debut at the World Championships against the returning champion.
Uzbekistanian kid, like really, really good, probably 80 fights. He was 17
Jesus
about
Christ.
Yeah, so he was 17 about to make the jump into, you know, A class the next year.
So I'm writing out his parents' name and phone number so I can call them after this kid kills
this
him.
This is your amateur debut?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Your amateur debut was against an amateur world champion?
Yeah.
At the World Championships.
Well, he was fighting
so ridiculous.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was
How did they have that set up?
I didn't even know because I was just going – I was like, I'm just going to – in my mind, I was going to go in there and fuck this kid up even though he was way taller than me. And, like, I wasn't cutting weight at the time. These guys cut weight. They take – you know, all those countries, the Eastern Bloc, they take it very seriously because if you get a gold medal there, you're pretty much set for life.
Yeah, Muay Thai is huge internationally. Most people don't understand it. At that time, 2008, 2009, it's kind of the dark era of international Muay Thai here in America. The United States Muay Thai Federation, which is kind of like the U.S. Olympic Committee because it's not an Olympic sport yet, it was literally who can afford to go. There's no government funding. There's no there was no selection process. And literally we had a team of six people, right? Thailand's got 40. Russia's got 50 people. We went there with six people. Anthony Lin, who was the president of Fairtex USA, was the founder of USMF. He was the poster boy at Fairtex just as a kid, and he didn't have any fights yet. He's just a good-looking kid that kicked really well. So that will take him over there. It'll be good experience for him. Mm-hmm. The whole time, I'm like, this kid's going to get fucking murdered. No way.
I mean, I had no idea what I was walking into. I had a few smokers.
How did it go?
He goes out.
I wanted him to tell me.
Oh, you wanted him? Go ahead, Tom.
I go out there. I just, like, get hit, and then I was like, holy shit, this guy hits like a man. He hits really hard. But I was just, I just didn't care. I just went in there, and I gave it all I had. I really did. And I was really disappointed in my performance because I really, truly believed I was going to win the fight. I went in there to win, even though I had not much experience. I didn't have 80 fights like this guy did. I had zero. I had maybe a couple of smokers,
right.
Two amateur fights when I was like 12 and 13. But that's about it, and one boxing fight. But that was it. This guy had 80, and a lot of them were probably professional fights, too.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Like, there's no such thing as amateur Muay Thai in Europe. Like, I mean, yeah, they consider it like B-class, but they still fight without shin guards. They still do all this. And, like, when they go in there, they're going in there to win. And I thought, I mean, I knew I lost the fight, but I lost a split decision, which was crazy.
Yeah,
crazy to go in there against, I knew something was up when I saw my matchup was like announced, and this guy's, he didn't have his full name. They only had his first name. I was like, they know this guy. I was like, it was like Gaston Bolaños against, what was it, Oy Beck or something like that.
And so, whatever happened to him?
I think we saw him the next year.
The next year, he went into like adult class, but it was like, so there's B class and there's A class. Mm-hmm. A class is where most of the pros go.
Right.
He went straight into A class after fighting me. His coach beat the shit out of him after winning a split decision against me. Just beat him.
Destroyed
like,
in
front
him.
Of you guys?
Oh,
in
yeah.
front of us.
In the locker room.
Because he heard.
What do you mean?
Because he heard that was only like my third fight or like my amateur debut.
Right.
He was like, and you know, Americans were in the really.
So he beat him in front of you? Like, yeah. How so?
Beat, like, just slapped the shit out of him. Like, one of the worst things I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's very, very different over there. And in the fight, the crowd got behind Gaston because he was doing very dynamic things. Mm-hmm. He was.
And I was really small, too. I was only like, what, 5'5, 5'4 at the time? Yeah. This guy was like 5'11.
And in between rounds, my light switch went off with him because literally I go in between rounds and I go, look over there. I said, this is the previous world champion. I said, you are going toe to toe with him. I said, he is tired. And he looks up at me. He goes, Gaston goes, I'm not tired. Americans don't get tired. I'm like, well, number one, calm down. You're Peruvian. Okay. Take it easy. Number two, you're the cutest thing ever. I love you to death. And from that moment on, this kid has literally been my son.
Yeah.
And what sealed it for me is while we were backstage, this kid was getting beat within an inch of his life by his coach. Gaston takes off his jersey, walks over and interrupts the beating and gives his jersey because that's kind of customary to give exchange jerseys.
You interrupted the beating?
Yeah.
How long was this beating going on for?
So they walked off. He wasn't even like his team had kind of left him too. His coach just walked him back and just like started slapping the shit out of him. And then I stopped and I was like, here.
So how long was he slapping him for?
Well, like the walk back was like, what, like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And just like so yelling. Just
in smacking him for 10 minutes.
Just berating him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. Everybody was like, oh shit, what's going on over there?
Yeah, that's not the best way to motivate someone.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah, he won the whole tournament.
And he won.
Year. Yeah.
He took
I was probably his toughest fight, though. Yeah.
Man. Yeah, The crazy thing about that is this, you know, in America, people don't even understand that Muay Thai could be that big somewhere else, that it could be that important to people. Yeah. You know, Muay Thai is a mystery to me in the sense that I just don't understand why it never caught on. I really don't get it.
I think it's part of it's the music, part of it's the ritual, part of it is just the way MMA blew up. I mean, if you look at
they go through all the Y crew and everything in Europe?
If it's Muay Thai, yeah. If it's kickboxing, no.
Right.
But if it's Muay Thai, yeah. But like he was the first, literally, he was the first junior that the U.S. ever sent to the World Championships, ever. He was by himself, and he was the only junior ever. Today, there are 16 juniors fighting in Thailand at the Junior World Championships. They went 8-0 today.
Yeah.
Eight,
so
no.
There's some momentum.
Huge momentum right now, literally.
But not in the public.
Not,
so it's in the fighters themselves.
Yes, it's not publicly known, but right now the best junior team at the Junior World Championships is the United States of
Have
America.
You thought about that, though? Why is that? Like, why? How come no one can figure out a way to make it exciting or make it put it on television and let people know, like, hey, this is – probably one of the most dynamic combats, definitely one of the most dynamic combat sports in the world next to MMA.
A lot of it has to do with money. It's promoters will come in and they will be the next best thing. Lion Fight got it right the most, and then they lost the Access TV deal.
What happened with them?
If you ask Lion Fight, they lost the deal because Access TV wanted too much commitment. If you ask Access TV, Lion Fight was canceling too many shows. It depends on who you ask. Mm. But
so that, now what are they on, like ESPN3 or some shit?
No. Flow Elite Combat is stream. Yeah,
nobody knows about it. Like,
yeah, well, which is a shame.
It was hard to get people to watch it on Access TV.
Yeah.
I mean, Access TV is a fairly fringe cable channel.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, again, much like MMA. I mean, it was the right place, right time, right recipe, Ultimate Fighter on the right night, and great fight at the end, and all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. You know the story better than anybody. That hasn't happened for Muay Thai yet, it's a shame. And I've been around it now, coached Miriam, Kevin. You know, these guys have carried Muay Thai on their shoulder for years. Nobody knew who it was.
How does Bellator's kickboxing ratings do?
It does. Honestly, I mean, it does as well as maybe a two-year-old rerun of Cops does, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it does better than Glory did.
Well, this is why. Well, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
Why does it do better than Glory?
Mm-hmm. I think maybe just because it ties to the Bellator name.
So Joe Schilling has decided no more kickboxing. He's no more Muay Thai, kickboxing.
Is he only doing MMA now?
He's doing it for financial reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in his 30s. And I think he probably realizes, like, how many years he have left. 5-6 years left.
Yeah.
Maybe if everything goes great, nothing gets blown out, you know, and he's just decided. You know, that bothers me.
Me too. It's a labor of love for Scott Coker. Literally, he's convinced Paramount to keep it going because they believe in him. He's doing it. Because
he started off with kickboxing.
Exactly, because he started out with Strikeforce.
Strikeforce was originally kickboxing, K-1.
It just bothers me. I don't get it. You know, I'm a big fan of boxing. I love boxing, but it's not as fun. Muay Thai is more fun to watch. It's more exciting, and I used to love watching Lion Fight. I was so happy when it was on. I have all of them recorded on my DVR.
Yeah.
You know, and now good luck trying to find Muay Thai on TV.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, not to toot our horn, but I mean, when it comes to Muay Thai, we're the biggest gym in North America, and we have the most active fighters, and it's hard to get my people where they need to be. There are other shows step up. You know, Triumphant is on Fight Pass. That's a great show. Friday Night Fights is trying. Lion Fight is still around. You know, I'll always support Lion Fight for, you know, hell, we helped build that brand to the best as we could. But right now, regionally, Dennis Warner in SoCal is always going to have shows. Triumphant's good. Friday Night Fights is good. Glory, you know, they're not really behind American talent yet. They're just not.
Well, the problem is they do a lot of shows in Europe, and these European fighters are extremely popular over there.
Absolutely.
I mean, if they had their druthers, they would do Badr Hari every weekend.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what they would do. You know, I mean, that guy sells out arenas.
Oh my God,
it's kind of crazy.
Like, you got that one, guy is scary.
It's so crazy.
Jesus Christ.
We were just playing a video the other day, slapping some hotel desk person.
Yeah.
Just walk behind the desk and smack this guy in the face. He gets arrested for breaking a guy's shin, stomping a guy's shin in half. He's so crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a very odd combination of a lethal fighter and a thug.
Yeah, he's both for sure.
And he wants you to know.
What mood is he in today? Which one's he?
Yeah. Well, you know, he's the most compelling story right now in European kickboxing, for sure. You know?
Oh, without question. They announced Collision 2, and they didn't even put his image up, and all of a sudden people are excited just because of him and Rico's first fight.
Are they supposed to fight again? Is that what's going to happen? Verhoeven and him?
I think that's the plan. That's where they're going.
Now, he broke his arm in that first fight. Did they know how? Was that a pre-existing injury, or is it just something that happened in the middle of a scramble?
It looked to me blocking a kick is what it looked like to me. And again, if you block a kick with one, the ulna is not going to take that. It's just not going to.
Right.
You know, you need to reinforce the block.
Yeah, Rico's a big dude, so he's huge. Kicks your arm and you don't. No.
Rico's unusual too, and he's a big guy, but he fights very technically, and he's got great cardio.
Yeah, moves really well.
Incredibly
well.
His gas tank is fantastic for a big guy.
Yeah, definitely.
When he got hurt bad against Jamal Ben-Sadiq, you're like, whoa, like this does not look good. Then he came back and stopped him. You're like, that motherfucker's the real deal.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a beast. But again, America, good guy could go to Walmart. Nobody knows who the fuck he is. Wander around. He's one of the best heavyweight kickboxers of all time. Literally nobody knows who he is. It's strange. You know?
Without question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you were training with Cody, when you were over at Team Alpha Male, what is the coaching like? Like, how are they doing rounds with him?
Well, he was doing his sparring separately. They brought me and Eddie up just to spar with him.
Who is coaching him?
Danny
Castillo?
Danny Castillo and Chris Holdsworth, yeah.
So they were essentially his coaches.
They were coaching him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you were working with him, were they saying, hey, we want to really work on certain things, or were they just letting you do your thing? Were they asking you to...
I was being, you know, I go up there and like I said, I go grapple.
Right.
And so I was trying to be a good... Giving him good looks, give him the switches, give him that like that TJ shoulder move type
thing.
Did
you practice that stuff or did you?
No, I just been one of those guys like when Kieran, ever since I started with Kieran, like, and I've had to help somebody like give him looks.
Right.
I've just been that guy and I've been good at it.
Did you practice TJ's looks or did you just kind of know how to do it?
I always switch regardless. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of my favorite things to do, just offensively and defensively. I love switching.
Did you have a traditional martial arts background? Did you start out with traditional martial arts?
I started with Muay Thai.
Yeah,
I started with Muay Thai, yeah.
Yeah, the best guys, you know, it's interesting now. That the switching thing has become almost like a standard thing. Like with TJ, you never know what he's doing. I mean, he doesn't have like a revert back to stance.
Mm-hmm.
He might stand southpaw, he might stand orthodox, and he can do both equally well.
Yeah. Well, I'm naturally, I ride with my left hand, naturally, but I stand orthodox. I surf orthodox, I skate orthodox.
Well, there's a lot of people, I mean, that was what Eddie Futch used to, or Emmanuel Stewart rather, used to teach guys to do that.
Yeah.
He would take a guy who's right-handed and make him fight southpaw. It's like, you want that lead hand to be your most coordinated hand.
Yeah, but we have pad sessions that I'll just stand southpaw the whole time, and I have no problem with it. I in fact, love sparring southpaw, and I love just switching.
Do you feel like your straight left hand has as much power as your straight right hand?
Sometimes even more.
Really?
Sometimes even more, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I have power with both hands almost equally. Just depends on the angle and where I'm catching. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I also try to catch people at the same time as they're trying to get away from my right hand. Mm-hmm. I'll switch stances and aggressively switch into the that left hand and make it a power hand. And they think they're getting away from my power hand, but really they're walking into it, and I make them switch into it.
Ah.
Yeah.
Now, so when you were working with Cody – Did they have any requests? Did they say, hey, this is what Cody's trying to work on?
You know, I was just switching a lot, trying to give him that switch hook that he got caught with last time. And
I
was trying to just be a good teammate and give him head kicks and that kind of movement. And he was doing fairly well blocking kicks, coming back, and trying to wrestle more. Because I think they were talking about that was one thing that he lacked in the first fight, not wrestling him enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what happened Saturday was definitely not the game plan. You know, you could see it wasn't anything like he sparred, and it wasn't anything like he trained. I think emotion absolutely took over.
Yeah.
So what was their game plan?
I think just piece him up, get him, you know, catch him like the first round, but actually finish the fight. I think that would have been more the
right.
But obviously, kick him a lot.
Right.
And just get him to walk into something. Try to wrestle him a little bit in there too. I think TJ came out really smart as well though.
Well, TJ throws himself into the fire too.
Yeah.
He does not play a safe game.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't on Saturday, and I think that he was probably a little surprised by how unsafe Cody was so early. Like I mean, that exchange at the end, I mean, it's Cody, I mean, TJ's just blocking and looking, and Cody is just going for broke everything he's throwing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when we were watching the replays, you could clearly see that Cody's path was wider and there was more strain, and then TJ was more loose and he got there quicker. You know, and the first knockdown when he tagged him with the right hand, that was really where it came from. They're both throwing at the same time, but TJ was also doing a better job of getting his head offline.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, TJ's relationship with Dwayne Ludwig is very unusual. is like those guys are like glue. I mean, they're fucking stuck together.
Yeah.
And Dwayne is a maniac. You know Dwayne.
I know Dwayne. I've known Dwayne a long time. We are friends. And when we coached against each other at the Ultimate Fighter, he literally in the parking lot reminded me that he had the fastest knockout in UFC history because he was fucking pissed. Like, he's just one of those guys that...
Who's pissed about what?
Just because we were trying to... He had a training practice that he invited all of Henry's guys to, but Henry couldn't come. And I was like, well, I'm going to have Johnson on come in, and Joe can't come. And he's like, hey, listen, I'm going to whip my dick out right now. I'm going to remind you, I've got the fastest knockout in UFC history, so you better calm down, boy. And I'm like, well, okay. But so he's very emotional. He's very focused, and he's very dedicated to TJ. So I'm agreeing with you on that, but he will go zero like that.
Oh, yeah, Dwayne's crazy as fuck. Yeah. I know Dwayne very, very, very well. But what I'm saying is that Dwayne is obsessed with TJ's performance and with TJ's improvement. Mm-hmm. When TJ first beat Henan Barao, Dwayne sat down with me. We sat down and we had lunch together that day. And he was just, and it was a fucking big underdog. I mean, Henan Barao was thought to be the best pound for pound fighter, if not number one, certainly number two. Yeah,
that
in
was
the world.
Insane. That was insane when he did that. I was like, Jesus Christ.
But it's also the way he did it. He came out so loose, like he was sparring. Mm-hmm. He came out like, you know, like they touched gloves, like he was going to do a sparring session.
Yeah.
And he looked like a guy he sparred with a fucking 100 rounds.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was no tension to him. It was very loose. Mm-hmm. He really loves that shit. He loves it. He's a rise to the occasion kind of guy, TJ is. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I think he really thrived off this rivalry with Cody. Yeah. Whereas with Cody... Especially because TJ won the first fight and won it by knockout.
Yeah.
You know, Cody like had all this inner tension, whereas TJ had this inner smile like through the entire process.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you. And I think Cody was definitely, it seemed like he was a little more emotional of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I, and we were talking about emotions and fights and everything, and one thing that I always remember when I get emotional, like even, and it happens in the sparring sessions, and you know it might happen in fights and stuff. And I always remember Kieran telling me, "You want to be."
That's your phone, bro.
It's not me. No, no, it's not me. No, can't be me.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Shut
young
that
man.
Piece of shit up. Now you got Siri going. You don't even know how to use a phone. You're one of those dudes.
Oh, I know how to use it.
You're one-handed it, like as if no one's going to notice.
I am. I'm getting it out of the way. Volume.
It's still on.
It's dead. I killed it. Go on, Gaston, please.
Anyways, I always remember. I always remember Kieran telling me, because I would get emotional at times, and I would let my Peruvian machismo get in the way, and I was like, I'm just, you know, especially like it will happen a lot with Kevin, you know, like. When Kevin first came to
Kevin
see
Ross.
CSA, Kevin Ross. When Kevin first came to CSA, man, those were I would get beat up a lot. Call it tough love. I don't know what you want to call it, but he would sweep me and beat me up and like.
Well, you want him to give it your best.
And
he
made me better. He turned me into a training partner versus like somebody he had to like. But he didn't baby me at any moment. He built me into what I am today. We became training partners. But one thing that I always remember from Kieran is like, you don't want to be emotional. You want to be like an assassin. You know, you want to go in there and be calculator. You want to be yourself. Because that's when I fight the best, when I'm myself and not, when I have no emotion involved.
Do you have any sort of a pre-fight routine that you go through mentally in order to get yourself into a state of mind like that?
You know, recently since I lost I don't know if you watched my last year's fight, my second MMA fight with Bellator. I got dropped. I got submitted.
Hit with a wheel kick.
With
right?
a wheel kick, yeah. I didn't see it coming.
And then you got triangled.
I was going through a lot of the time. I'm going through a divorce. You know, very emotional time of my life last year. And then I had to, you know, dig deep and rise to the occasion and, you know, get out of that hole that I was in. So I started grounding my energy before fights. I was trying to visualize and really see myself, you know, doing the things that I would do, because that's how I got a lot of my knockouts in Lion Fight. It was the weirdest thing. I could like just like visualize and see it. Like when I knocked out Tyler Toner, I saw that happening before the fight even, and I was like, it felt like a deja vu moment. Like, oh shit, like I seen this happen. And I just like try to like get as calm as I possibly can. I just remind myself there's another day in the office, and like I've had almost 50 fights now, and I just know that it, you know, regardless of what happens, whether I win or lose, I'm gonna go out there and give it my best. But what I try to do is I just try to like close my eyes and like I call it grounding myself. I visualize like roots coming out of my feet and hands, and I really like ground myself and ground my energy into.
You visualize roots, like yeah, tree roots.
Coming yeah, like out of tree you. Roots coming out of my hands and coming out of my feet. And this last fight was crazy, actually. I could visualize it like going all the way into the ring. And like once I walked in there, it just felt like home.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't think I even told him that.
Is this something that you read how to do, or is this something that someone coached you how to do?
Actually, my ex-wife taught me how to do that. Funny enough, yeah, she taught me how to do that. And I thought, she's fucking bullshitting. Anyways, I tried it. And
did you try it after you got divorced?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, honey.
Yeah.
You got the roots and you got the cats.
Did you call her up yeah. and tell you she was right?
I texted her a while back and I was like, you were right. Like, that shit works.
That's fine.
And it's crazy. I, you know, that along with some alpha brain, I go out there and I'm like, I'm ready to rock and roll. I feel at home.
Now, what I was getting to was that relationship between coach and athlete, when it works out great, it's so important. And when you don't have that, like, I mean, there's no disrespect to Danny Castillo and Chris Holdsworth, who are both were very good fighters, mm-hmm. and I'm sure are dedicated. But Dwayne is a different kind of thing. I mean, he obsesses on various techniques and improvements and footworks and how to mm-hmm. change things and how to set things up. He's all day, 24/7. He never shuts off.
Yeah.
And the kind of relationship that Dwayne has with TJ is so rare and so beneficial. Mm. But that the kind of relationship you guys have, this kind of really tight bond between coach and fighter,
mm-hmm.
there's you can win without it, mm-hmm. but when you have it, it is just
so powerful.
It's so powerful.
It's so powerful. I feel like it's crazy now. Like when I'm warming up, like I can see he's getting nervous for me, but I kind of get I see. I was like, "Oh shit, he's worried about me," you know. But it makes me want to like go in there and like make him proud, you know. And like mm-hmm. I know he's gonna be there regardless.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy. But like I can see like he tries to hide. And it's like, "Oh, I'm fine." Like, you know, like let's get warm. Whatever. But well, I can just see like that like he's getting nervous for me, you know. And that, like I said, that just makes me want to do better and go in there and like listen to him and just.
Well, you also got to realize how fortunate you are to have found him. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of great Muay Thai coaches in mm-hmm. America. Mm-hmm. I mean, where I live out here, good luck finding a gym to even train at. I mean, you can go to some guy who's going to hold pads for you, but like as far as like legit Muay Thai coaching in the mm-hmm. Valley, I mean, you've got Saxon or you've got. Saxon and Julio out mm-hmm. in Van Nuys.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's a half hour, 45 minutes away from here.
Yeah.
But
especially with this traffic, man. Jesus
Christ. Yeah, that's a half hour, 45 minutes at 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah. I should say. At 3, it'll take you 2 hours to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you just stumbled upon him in mm-hmm. this lucky way when you were that young.
Well, like I said, we just clicked, man. Yeah. We just clicked. Like after I lost that fight against that kid with 80-plus fights, we just clicked, and then I started. I didn't work my conditioning at all back then. Like I just ran and trained.
That's another lucky thing. I mean, you have a fucking giant CrossFit gym. Yeah, you're not absolutely. Just no. Your gym is not mm-hmm. just Muay Thai. Yeah. You have a massive fucking gym.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, we started out at 5,000 square feet. Then 3 years later, we went to 12. Now we're at 25.
Jesus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. CrossFit standalone. And again, a lot of my people don't use CrossFit. Like Kevin, he can't keep muscle on, so he powerlifts with our powerlifting coach Jesse Burdick. He doesn't do CrossFit because it's he needs to keep weight on. Gaston CrossFits. And then so for us, everything. What's unique about our gym is that everything's kind of done under the same roof. Mm. I don't do a lot of guest coaching. I'm doing it with the alpha male guys because Alex Munoz is coaching wrestling for us. And I felt for me, that was one area that as a gym we needed to grow. So Alex comes in and coaches. So I coach his stand up and it's been a good beneficial relationship for both gyms. But I don't go there and coach. Mm. Those guys will come down. Benito works with me now. Alex works with me.
He'll bring Ricardo Ramos, who just fought.
Yeah, Ricardo comes down.
And, you know, Before the wrestling class, we'll have a little sparring session, like small gloves. We have a full-size cage, so it's very beneficial. Yeah. And then we'll just, you know, we'll just do like a round robin type of thing. Like one goes in, the other one's out. And it's great. Like, I get really good looks from those guys.
What made the decision for you to do three different sports? Like, why not dedicate yourself to one?
Well, I started purely as a Muay Thai fighter.
Right.
And then the opportunity to sign with Bellator came in. We always knew that MMA would be, you know, where we will end up. But
why?
I just love fighting, man. I love fighting. I love Muay Thai, obviously. If I could just do Muay Thai, I'll probably do that. But
so if Muay Thai had the same financial possibilities?
You know, I used to say that a lot, actually. Let me correct myself there. But now it's like I feel like I'm getting so much better in, like, completing my journey as a martial artist that MMA is definitely where I want to end up at just alone. And then we had the opportunity with Bellator to do kickboxing and MMA and then maybe do – a few Muay Thai fights on the side if, you know, it didn't interrupt with anything with them. So that's pretty much how it happened.
I mean, he fought five times last year, you know, and he fought kickboxing, MMA, and Muay Thai. And if he was just like with the UFC, he couldn't do that.
I think Muay Thai prepares you better for MMA than kickboxing does, not just because of the fact you have elbows, but also because of the fact that the clinch.
The grappling. People don't understand how much grappling there is
right.
in Muay Thai. Like when you go to Thailand, and I went to Sik Sampinong, one of the best camps in Bangkok, and one of the best camps in the world. They have Sitichai, who's like right now the glory champion at 155. But they clinch twice a day for at least 30 minutes to an hour every day. That's a lot of grappling.
Yeah. A lot of grappling.
Yeah,
so their sweeps and just their ability to manipulate each other.
And I think that's one thing that has helped my understanding in wrestling and jiu-jitsu as well. I pick up things a lot faster than your average Muay Thai fighter probably does.
Right,
yeah.
Just because of that clinch.
Mm-hmm.
So how much jiu-jitsu are you doing?
What do we focus on right now? So we have Monday. About 4 days a week?
About 4 days
a week. About four days a week of jiu-jitsu. A couple of days of just drills and situational sparring, that
so
type of thing.
So when you're doing a fight like your last Bellator fight, which you just won, was it 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago.
About 3 weeks ago.
When you're doing that, how far out will you just do kickboxing? Like how much time do you give yourself where you don't do anything else? Or do you still wrestle and still do jiu-jitsu even though you're –
we still,
for
you know, I'm fairly new to MMA and to grappling alone, so I try to just keep a couple days a week in there so I can, you know, keep it fresh, you know, because I'm fighting September 29th again, MMA. So
who are you fighting?
I don't know yet. I don't think we have an opponent yet.
They haven't yet.
It's a month away. They don't give you an opponent.
It's like six weeks away.
Yeah. 8 weeks. 8 weeks.
Around.
8 weeks.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, it's what is today? The 5th? 6th of August? 6th of August?
Yeah.
So it's almost 8 weeks.
Yeah. So they give you an opponent, and then you have to decide how to prepare. Like if it's a stand-up fighter, we just ramp up the stand-up more.
Well, most of these guys, even the very MMA fighters and their stand-up guys, they're going to try to take me down regardless if they find the opportunity. Once they get cracked. They're gonna want to go on the ground regardless. So we're always trying to, you know, work on getting right back up. You know, working on keeping control if we're in their guard, so we don't get submitted with anything like it happened last year in September right. was it 23rd. So we're always trying to work all areas regardless. And I'm always trying to, as a martial artist, I always want to be ready for anything that could possibly happen. You know, it's a fight, man. Like anything can happen.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. You know, and like people always watch tape and. Fight as a fighter, I've learned that I can evolve so much in just 6 to 8 weeks, you know, which is like what people have as camps. And so you never know who you're going to get when you're like in front of them in the cage. So I'm always trying to be ready for anything.
Do you think there's ever going to come a time where you get into the championship level where you just stop fighting Muay Thai and stop fighting kickboxing and just concentrate on MMA?
Yeah, probably. I think There's definitely going to be a time that I'm only going to be an MMA fighter. I definitely see that in the future. I would also like to be like one of the first guys to hold a kickboxing belt. Like a Bellator kickboxing world championship, and be like a top contender. I want to be definitely that kind of guy that can do they can prove that they can do both, you know, at a high, at a super high level.
It's interesting. Bellator is really starting to make progress. I mean, they have real legit world-class fighters now. You know, they have Gegard Mousasi's arguably, if not the best, one of the best 185-pounders in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my opinion, he's right up there with Robert Whittaker and
he's Yoel one of my favorites, Romero. His striking is...
He's a beast.
He's I'm a big fan of Mousasi.
Yeah, I am too. Well, he's super well rounded too. Yeah. I mean, with everything, mm-hmm. and he's just so calm. His demeanor, his mentality. He's an assassin, a legit assassin. Yeah. As is Roy McDonald.
And they're both. Yeah, that's the card that I'm fighting on. So I'm super excited.
It's a crazy
about
fight
that,
they decide to make. Like, why the fuck would you do that? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why you would take arguably your best two guys.
Your two top guys.
Fight, and they're not even in the same weight class. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess to make a super fight.
I think there's pressure with the super fight movement with the UFC for Bellator to keep up. I think there's probably, and again, might not be Scott's idea, might be Paramount's idea. I don't know.
Well, it could very well be Rory and Gegard's idea too. Yeah, you know, I mean, they might be. Well, saying,
they call each other out
noise.
Right away. Yeah. As soon as Mousasi became the champion at 185, they were like, "Listen, man,
Rory's a fucking psycho." I mean, he's a legit fucking psycho in the best way possible. Yeah. You know, he's a really good guy. Do you get to know him at all? Do you know
him? Not at all. We're both on the under the Monster team with Hans and all those guys.
Shout out to Hans Monkamp.
Yeah, man. Triumph United.
Shout
man.
Out to Hans.
Triumph United.
Yeah, I got it. He just sent me a bunch of gloves and shit. And you guys were saying his bags are the best bags.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely. His gloves, the Death Adder. I have a pair. It's my favorite glove.
He makes great gloves.
Favorite glove.
He knows his shit.
Yeah, definitely.
So what we were just saying.
We were talking about Rory.
Oh,
being
what I was saying is like people had this idea of who he was, and then he came on and did my podcast, and people were like, "Oh, he's fucking normal.
Yeah,
he's a good guy."
Yeah,
like everybody thought he was like this autistic psycho. I've never communicate with people. Just
I've never met him,
people.
But from what I heard from Hans, he's like a super nice guy.
Very smart.
Know, yeah, very intelligent.
Very calm.
Yeah.
He's funny, actually.
Yeah,
you know, it's just
his fight with Lawler was like one of my favorite fights of all time. Jesus Christ.
Fight. What a crazy fight, man.
Yeah. First time I ever saw him was when he fought Nate. I was there with when Jake fought GSP. I was cornering Jake.
It's Canada, right?
It was in Canada, up in Toronto. And I didn't know who he was. And I watched that fight from the back, and I was just like, holy shit, this kid is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody anticipated his level of wrestling at that time. I think Nate thought he was going to be able to slap him up. And, you know, that after that, I became a huge, huge fan. I mean, obviously, Nate's my boy, and I love Nate, and, you know, 209.
Just wrong weight class.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
not big
it's
enough.
One thing to fight Connor at 170, but Rory's giant at 170. And he's also training with GSP, and just TriStar, and I'm a giant fan of Firas Zahabi and what he's managed to put together up there in Montreal. They just have a camp that's just, it's just such an elite camp. You know, it's just a different level of just well-rounded fighters. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking phenomenal place.
Yeah, phenomenal coach. One of my favorites. One of my favorite coaches.
I'm excited to see Nate fight Poirier. I'm excited to see Nate back.
Yeah.
You know? I was wondering. I was like, fuck, man, it's been like 2 years.
Yeah.
I was surprised he took the fight. And then I was also surprised that he was mad that they were doing Conor versus Khabib.
Yeah, I didn't expect that at all.
They were both mad. Dustin's mad, too. I was like, what the fuck are you guys mad for?
Well, I thought Dustin was going to wait for, you know, to get his title shot, but I guess that fight makes sense, man.
He might not have got that title shot, though. Tony Ferguson's healing up. You know, he's back in the mix. Who knows what's going to happen with James Vick when James Vick is going to fight Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
You know, Vick's on, I think, a 10 or 11 fight win streak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that weight
something
class,
crazy
man.
Like that. 155
pounds.
Fucking stacked.
Stacked.
That's a stacked weight class, man. You know, and then you still have so many guys that are coming up that are, you know, like one or two fights away. Then, of course, you got fucking Kevin Lee, who, in my opinion,
he's
has the best argument
he's
for the
monster.
Next title shot.
He's a monster.
He's a monster.
Yeah. His last fight, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's him, Tony Ferguson, when Tony's healthy again. Tony's not 100% healthy. But, I mean, Dustin, I think it's right to take that fight because he's not the most compelling guy. I know he wants to, but he just got knocked out by Michael Johnson a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, there's a lot, maybe a little bit more than a year ago. Maybe.
Just somewhere in that range.
But it's like still, and then you got to remember what Johnson, when Johnson fought Khabib mauled him. I mean, there's a lot of a lot of people in that weight class.
Yeah. So yeah, Johnson went down to 45, though, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Johnson's fighting Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, Philly's coming down to train with us as well.
But super he lost cool his first fight at 45 to Darren Elkins, and he looked really good physically. Like, he was ripped for the first time. Yeah. He was shredded. But I wonder, like, man, how much does he walk around at? He's a big fella. Mm-hmm. Like, how much does he walk around at, and how much is he depleting his body to get down to that 100?
That's one thing, like, I don't think, like, some people, like, realize, like, yeah, okay, you made the weight, you're only cutting like 7-8 pounds like the night before, but when you're depleting your body throughout like that camp, I think I can definitely, you know, people ask me all the time, hey, are you gonna go to bantamweight? I'm like, fuck no, man. I like feeling good throughout.
What do you
my
walk
camp.
Around at
like 162?
Oh, that's not too bad.
No, and that's what people tell me.
17 pounds.
That's what people tell me. Like, oh, you could probably make bantamweight. And I was like, yeah, man, but like I like to feel strong physically, mentally strong throughout my camp. Then only cut like 8 to 10 pounds.
Yeah, we don't cut a lot of weight at CSA. I don't
smart.
I don't like it. I don't want it. And part of it is, you know, I got this kid knocked out. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, as a coach, you have to own it. It was my fault. Fight week, I'm going to take 5 extra pounds off of this kid, you know, just because he's not going to fight. Okay, then we don't fight.
Right.
You learn as you go.
Right.
So no, I have a, you know, 10% rule. I'll pull you.
One FC is doing. You know, we had Ben Askren in here, and he was explaining how one FC does these hydration tests, and they test you all the time. They test you several times. They find out what your actual weight is. They test your
like
hydration
before,
levels,
right?
several times. They moved everybody up a weight class. They kept their champions but they made, you know, Ben, instead moved of a up, 170 they made him a 185 pound champ.
California's doing hydration tests on fight day right now.
Yes.
Yeah,
which
just fight day.
They're also,
I don't think it works that well.
No. Well, they're also making you not weigh more than 10% more than what you weighed in.
And they've moved up a couple. They don't. I don't think they fine you. You're the first time you do it. They just like advise you to go up. And they don't like. I think they don't allow you to fight at that same weight.
A 200-pound fighter, that's 20 fucking pounds. Yeah. That's a lot of weight, man. Yeah, that's a lot of weight. Yeah. Like if I pulled 20 pounds of water out of my body right now, I mean, I'd be stumbling into walls.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're on death's door.
I mean, you're
literally.
You're not going to take shots the same way. You're just
no
not.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
And your organs. That's a big thing. Your organs start fucking up. I know a guy who. Well, I know someone who knows him. He was in a bodybuilding competition, and this is a 36-year-old guy who's, you know, just amateur bodybuilding competition, got down to a really low body fat and just really wanted to win the competition, won, and then 2 weeks afterwards, his fucking body shut down. His organs started shutting down. He had a heart attack. His family found him dead, just died of a heart attack, 36 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the water comes out of the organs last, and it goes back in last.
Yeah.
So
it's also the damage you do to them by depleting them and drying them out, your kidneys. And
Well, going back to that fight that I got knocked out, I cut all that weight. I made the weight. You know, I weighed in everything, but I couldn't keep water in. I just, like, I was drinking and, like, I just felt like shit. I went to bed probably like only a couple pounds heavier after cutting like 12 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, I was just, I couldn't keep water in. Like, I was
taking Pedialyte and stuff like that as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. He works with Dolce now.
Yeah. I work with Dolce totally now and I do it the smart way. But back then, like, we would just do whatever.
And
like,
Gatorade
and anything like that. I just couldn't, I didn't even eat that night because I couldn't hold anything in. My stomach just went in such a, like, stage that I was just like,
ugh. Have you compared methods? Like, have you guys talked to Lockhart and different guys and see how everybody does it? Does everybody do it the same way?
No. Not everybody's doing it the same way. Most people are using a probiotic, right?
Probiotic to rehydrate?
To get your stomach ready to start digesting food again and all of that. So
what probiotic do they use?
It depends on who's sponsoring them. you know. Yeah. So for us right now, you know, we're using Mike's stuff. Mike's been tremendous to the team through the years. It's all natural. I mean, you know, his rehydration drink is, you know, water, Himalayan salt, honey, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to put it out there, but it's all natural stuff.
And it's all stuff really that you're taking during, you know, you're like, I'm always having chia seeds and pink Himalayan salt and honey.
I like Lockhart, but literally I know that, you know, he worked with Dustin, and there were three different shake bottles that Dustin had to consume.
Dustin Ortiz.
Okay. Before his last fight, the head kick.
You got to let everybody know there's a million people.
Dustins, yes. Dustin Ortiz. And he had three different shake bottles, and each one had different ingredients to be taken at different times, and it was just really hard for Dustin to keep track of all that.
Is there science behind that, though?
That I don't know. I don't know enough about what George is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I get that it would be hard to keep track of it, but if there's a tangible benefit to keeping track of those three different things.
For me, the natural method that Dolce uses is what I'll use if a fighter's not paying
somebody else to do it. So you have this rehydration drink, and you make so much of it, like a gallon or whatever, and you're only absorbing chia seeds, pink Himalayan salt, lemon.
Pink Himalayan salt is what you...
Yeah.
It sounded like you said pinky Millen salt.
No, pink Himalayan salt.
he said it again.
You should hear him ask for packwort.
I've only been speaking English for what, like 12 years?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, it's, I get it, man. No big deal.
Coach, can we do packwort tonight? Sure, of course, Gaston. No problem.
Yeah. So, sorry, chia seeds, pink Himalayan salt,
lemon, and honey.
Why honey? What is the honey for?
I don't know the purpose behind it. I just put it. It tastes good. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Definitely tastes good.
Yeah. I think you're going to take some of the sting off of the salt and just for a little bit of the carb and the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So right off the scale, you take 16 ounces of the drink with some fruit.
Uh-huh.
And then you wait 50 minutes. So you're absorbing all the nutrients versus like drinking or eating too much, which is what I used to do.
Eat a sandwich right away.
Which is probably what happened that one time.
I was a fucking mad scientist at that time. I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to take a little bit of this.
Creatine.
Because, you know, every ounce of carbs, you know, you're going to hold 3 ounces of water, and creatine is going to make this like, well, the
creatine. Does creatine help you rehydrate? Because it does make you retain water, right?
Yeah. Yes, but if you're not taking creatine normally, you know, it's going to be, but and again, at the time, early on in my career, you know, a lot of everything that I've done from hand wrapping to conditioning to hydration, it's all learn as you go.
Creatine does make you stronger. It really does absolutely work, but it also makes your face fat. it definitely makes you, if you just put more mass
put on that winter coat on.
Yeah, it's a water absolutely mass.
Creatine monohydrate, you know, as far as like crealkaline and all these other, but creatine monohydrate is one of the only proven supplements legally that can make you stronger. But again, whether or not it's good for you, you know, science says whatever, but
I think it is good for you. I
believe it is.
I think it's actually been proven to actually have Jamie, Google creatine nootropic benefits, because I feel like I remember reading that they're actually finding that there's some cognitive benefit to taking creatine.
No, absolutely. I read the same thing.
And more water. Your brain would function better. Because you know how it is when you're dehydrated. You can't fucking remember shit.
Yeah.
My brain's useless when I'm dehydrated.
Well, think about cutting 12 pounds.
I used to do it in the old Taekwondo days and fight the same day. And no rehydration. Didn't know what I was doing. And when I went from 140 to 154, that's when I got good. When I stopped cutting all the weight. Before that, I was just a zombie.
Yeah.
I see it in these guys. I see these guys show up at the weigh-in, and I see their sunken eyes and their sunken cheek, and it makes me sick, man, which is why I constantly harp on this fucking 1FC thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I talked to the UFC guys. I talked to them a couple times. I was like, look, you guys have implemented this unbelievable, innovative, and really just fantastic strategy for cutting out all the steroid use.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you guys done is amazing. Yeah. It's so progressive. You're on top of it. You're ahead of everybody. And you're really setting the standard. Do that shit with weight cutting.
They should, yeah.
Do that shit with weight cutting. Don't blow up your champions. Move them. Move them. Move them to just decide. You have real champions. 8 reasons creatine is the best nootropic. There it is. Creatine is a molecule that allows cells to store energy in your brain cells for use at another time. This extra energy means you can do more work or study more effectively. Unlike caffeine, you don't feel like you have more energy. Okay, this is not a science journal. What is this? Like someone's blog or some shit?
Yeah, a bunch of like places
negates symptoms of sleep deprivation. Oh, shit. So you need some of that. Sometimes life I just got back from Thailand. I was in Thailand for 9 days.
Right.
And I've been back for a week, and I still wake up after sleeping for 2 hours.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Why am I awake? And then I go downstairs. I'll eat. I'll watch TV. Mm. And I'm like, I might as well work out. I'm wide awake. Yeah. And then an hour later, exhausted. Yeah. Can't wait to go to sleep. Go to sleep 4 more hours.
Do you train at all out there?
No. I had a meniscus. I was just there with my family for a vacation. Oh, okay. But I would say a very fascinating thing that happened to me. I had a meniscus tear, small meniscus tear, and I went running on it. I was doing yoga on it. It seemed to be fine. Then I ran on it because it seemed like it was just kind of like my knee was just a little sore.
Yeah.
And then after I ran on it, it locked up on me, like was really tight. So I said, fuck, I got to go get an MRI. So I get an MRI. They say, yeah, you've got a meniscus tear. You can get a meniscopy. You know, is that how they say it? Meniscopy, whatever. The operation. Or we could try exosomes. Exosomes, which is Google exosomes so we can explain it in a technical way. But I had some of that shot into my shoulder with miraculous results.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had a bunch of different things done to my shoulder, and then I always wind up re-injuring it partially, and then I'll get more stem cells. This had, by far, the greatest benefit of anything I've ever done.
Wow.
So I get it shot into my knee. When I say within 2 weeks I had no pain, I mean fucking nothing. Mm-hmm. Like deep squats, no problem, not bothering me at all. And I was doing only body weight stuff for like 6 weeks.
I need it. I need to know about it.
I'm telling you.
Not for me, for my wife. She's my test dummy.
Fucking incredible what this has done. I ran yesterday, ran in the hills for the first time in 6 weeks. Zero pain, zero discomfort. I woke up this morning saying, fuck, it better not be stiff. I don't feel it, man. Yeah. It feels like there's nothing there.
Wow, that's impressive.
Regenerative medicine, what they're doing, what T.J. Dillashaw had done.
Mm-hmm.
T.J. Dillashaw went down to Panama on 2 separate occasions to work with Dr. Neil Reardon, who is doing that in Panama. Well, they're also doing similar things right now. They're able to do that in Santa Monica, but it's under some sort of a test thing. They're doing like a test study to see how this stuff works. But they do it with PRP as well. So they put exosomes in your body, and they inject it with PRP, and the PRP and the exosomes work together and regenerate tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It's radical shit, man. I mean, you used to have a meniscus tear. Your knee was fucked up for months.
Yeah.
And if it was so stiff that you couldn't walk without a limp, it's not going to get better in a week.
Mm-hmm.
This shit was better in a week. In 2 weeks, there was zero even recognition that there was anything wrong. It didn't feel like there was anything wrong.
Well, that is crazy.
It's fucking nuts, man. Right. And this is, you know, here we are in 2018. 2028, they're going to grow you a new fucking leg. I mean, we're really close to some crazy shit.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know they're repairing completely torn ACLs now? Instead of replacing them?
They just repair them?
Your ACL snaps.
Yeah.
They've figured out a way to repair them where they got someone back to the U.S. bobsled team 4 months after the operation.
That's crazy.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
They've got guys doing box jumps 4 months after complete ACL tears.
My wife competed at the CrossFit Games 4 months after ACL replacement.
How'd she do that?
Dr. Maury Harwood in Los Gatos.
How is that possible? But the ACL would not have been reformed by then.
She had it replaced. She had the cadaver graft.
But the cadaver graft, you understand, is just a scaffolding.
Understood.
Yeah, completely. So it wouldn't have been fully formed by then.
Well, here's the thing: is the way CrossFit works is not an impact. It's not a contact sport.
Right.
So surgery in October. She was competing again in February. Right. So November, December, January, February, and then by the time the games rolled around in July, she was now at like that 8 month mark. And
so 8 months is okay. Ago. They say 6 months is when it's really pretty much healed.
Right. But she was in the gym the next day, Right, like literally, when you have ACL surgery. Well,
I follow your wife on Instagram.
Jack Jessica.
She's a maniac, dude.
At Jack Jessica.
What is it like being married
to
a maniac?
I made her a maniac. When I met her, she was a, when I
bet she did a lot of it herself.
When I met her, she was a hippie and she was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously,
yeah, but the level of maniac that she has, there ain't nobody making that.
No. That's true.
That shit's in there.
It's definitely in there. There you go.
But yeah, there's a fucking room that's always been in there filled with crazy.
Oh no, she's amazing. 43. Yeah. She's doing her first figure competition now. She took the year off of.
What is a figure? What is that?
It goes
a bodybuilding type.
Yeah, thing? Like, yeah. She's never done it, like so bikini. She set like a bunch of powerlifting records. She went to the games twice. She fought. She was on the U.S. hockey team, and now she's going to do a figure comp. And then you know she's crazy. She's
mom.
Amazing.
Wow,
his mom.
That's your mom.
I don't know if you saw that picture that I posted from my like last kickboxing fight, but it was Kieran in the corner. It was Jessica right there holding the eyes. It was like an amazing picture.
It's amazing that she could start training that hard 4 months later, because a lot of people, well, especially the real issue with fighters is the lateral movement.
Yeah.
It's all the footwork and the movement, and that's when they always wind up blowing their knee out. Like so many guys. Yeah.
I tore my MCL last year completely.
Did you?
Two weeks before his MMA debut.
There she is.
Yeah,
absolutely. But she, so like, but most people, like you said, she's a maniac. Most people aren't like her. When they give you that range of motion machine the day after surgery, they say you should be in this 5 hours a day.
Right.
She's in it 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
And she was in the gym the next day rowing with her legs straight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just there's a level of just dedication and commitment to rehab that she had.
When I tore my ACL, I have a steam room in my house, and I would just get in there every day and do deep squats in the steam room and just through the pain.
Yeah.
But because of that, I never had an issue with any range of motion whatsoever, where I've had two friends that have had ACL operations within the past year that had to go back and go under and get manipulated because they didn't have range of motion.
Wow.
So they take you, put you out, and just take your knee and like crack, because you just can't handle the pain.
Right.
That's all it is. But in my opinion, take that pain early so that body, it never has a chance to lock up and all that scar tissue develop. Just break that shit down real early.
Yeah. Well, I tore my MCL completely gone off the top of the bone last year, 5 weeks before my MMA fight, debut, 5 weeks.
Tore it off the bone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like I go in and the doctor's like, listen, man, I don't want to scare you, but this is probably the worst MCL injury I've ever seen.
Oh, you don't want to scare me.
Yeah. But
shout out to Dr. Donnelly.
But it's gone. It's going to hurt, but, you know, it's gone. So
what does that mean, it's gone?
He said it's gone. Like, you can start training. You can start. He's like, this is the way he explained. He's like, listen, like, you might not be able to fight in 5 weeks. I don't know. I'm not sure. I wouldn't recommend surgery because you're an athlete.
He would recommend surgery because you're an athlete.
That's what he said.
What does that mean?
I don't know. He's like, you should start doing PT. Normally, I don't recommend this until 2 weeks after the injury. But
he didn't explain why he wouldn't recommend surgery because you're an athlete? Because
it would put me out for 6 months.
But it would heal at 100%. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
But because you're an active athlete?
No. What he's leaving out is he had so much stability already.
Yeah.
He said
48 hours later, it looks pretty good. Considering you tore it completely off the bone.
He was, other than the MRI, you wouldn't know that the MCL was gone.
Okay, so now when it's torn off the bone, explain what happens. Can you?
So it was on top of the bone.
So the MCL is the outside? Or inside, is that the LCL?
Inside. Yeah.
So it's on the inside and it's separated from the bone. So how's it heal?
How did it heal? What he said is, because it's on top of the bone, you have much less stability.
Here we got to look at it.
Yeah.
So there's the MCL. So it tore off the bone.
Yeah. Right on the top, he said.
Huh.
There.
So it ripped off?
Completely, yeah.
The whole thing?
Grappling, yeah. Gone. Yeah.
So the whole thing's gone?
Yeah.
So there's no MCL?
Nope.
So you don't have an MCL right now?
No.
I don't know. I'm fine.
No, he doesn't.
You don't know.
He doesn't have an MCL right now.
So, but all the other stuff and the muscles keep it intact.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what he said is,
man, but did you think that like for long term stability, for your long term career, probably be a good idea to have an MCL?
I don't know. I haven't had a problem with it, man. I fought 3 different combat sports last year.
It's not bothering you at all?
It hasn't bothered me. I was running, doing full sprints 2.5 weeks later after it happened.
Wow.
He saw me walking. He's like, "Where's your brace, man?" I was like, "Oh, it's in the car. I don't need it anymore. It hurts. It kind of pinches the knee." He's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Oh, I just got cleared to run." So he told me right as it happens, like, "Listen, like, you," I told him the situation. I was like, "I have a fight in 5 weeks. I need to get ready for it. It's my debut. Is a big thing. It's my MMA debut. Is a big thing." He's like, "I don't know, man. Like, it's kind of your call on this one. Like, you might be able to fight. You might like see how you feel, type of thing. I'll allow you to do PT starting tomorrow." So what I did, I was doing PT and I was doing cryotherapy twice a day, every day. So I was keeping the swelling down and trying to strengthen the leg at the same time.
But that MCL, it's not a partial tear. It's a full tear?
No, full tear. Gone. He told me, he's like, "There's nothing you can do about it. It's gone. It's going to hurt."
So here it is right here.
Yeah.
So it's a grade 3 tear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gone.
Gone.
So you don't have that thing there. Nope. And they probably can't even replace it at this point. Unless they use some sort of a cadaver one. And then you'd be out for 6 months.
Yeah. And he fought 5 times since.
Yeah, fuck everything about that, bro.
He was like, to this day, he's like, you changed my perception and MCLs completely. Because he didn't believe it when I told him, I can run now.
Does he ever work with athletes?
That's all he does. He used to be the A's doctor. That's all he does. He focuses
on how does he – how that seems so crazy. Maybe you have an unusual knee.
I don't know. I just ate a lot of maca powder.
Peruvian maca.
It's that maca powder and that kamu powder. And that was it, man.
That is insane. Yeah. That, you know, you don't need that.
I committed a lot to my rehab, though. I was, like I said, I was doing twice a day, doing cryotherapy, ice, and trying to do everything I possibly could to fight.
Yeah, I'll also say that, you know, you get a lot of bad raps, you know, with CrossFit. And, you know, listen, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be spin. It could be CrossFit. It could be Taekwondo. There's good CrossFit, there's bad CrossFit, there's good Taekwondo, there's bad Taekwondo. At the end of the day, this kid had been doing general physical preparedness for years. He's in phenomenal shape. Everything that he does, the stability in his legs, like I gave him a stability test after he hurt his knee, and I couldn't, I'm like, I think it's still there. I said, go get an MRI, be sure. But there was no movement in his leg whatsoever because he's so strong.
That's pretty crazy and pretty fortunate, right?
Yeah. No, I was lucky. I was definitely lucky. He still doesn't believe it to this day that it happened.
Yeah. So what else do you do in terms of like recuperative? You said you did cryotherapy. Do you do sauna work at all?
I like the infrared sauna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that I just started doing that recently. I was just doing a lot of the cryotherapy.
I don't know if there's any benefit to infrared. Is there? Do you know? I just know your body needs to heat up. That's all it is. Is there a benefit to using infrared as opposed to a regular sauna?
Again, I mean, there are 10,000 people that were probably screaming that we gave creatine a shot out, and I'm sure there are people that are going to say infrared is benefit and infrared kills you. but I do believe that, you know, again, hot-cold therapy works. And, you know, getting your body hot and, you know, getting your body cool and manipulating your metabolism is something that needs to be done and should be done.
Yeah, well, it's heat shock proteins and cold shock proteins that reduce inflammation. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of studies on that. But one of the more interesting studies is on sauna use and the fact that this reduction of inflammation has led to a 40% reduction in overall cause mortality. Meaning, all-cause mortality means strokes, heart attacks, cancer. 40% reduction over a long study that they did, and I think they were doing it 4 times a week for 20 minutes a day.
Well,
it's fucking crazy. But it's that reduction of inflammation. Inflammation is the number one enemy. It's the enemy of your health. It's the cause of so many diseases and ailments. And if you can do something to mitigate that, whether it's cryotherapy or sauna work. Mm-hmm. And then cryotherapy gets a bad rap, too, because there's a lot of unfounded claims. You know, you go to some of those more unscrupulous cryotherapy websites, and, you know, they're basically making shit up.
They bash it.
Well, I mean, the ones that are talking good about it, the ones that are selling it, they're talking about how much fat you lose and all this different stuff. Yeah. Like, look. It reduces inflammation. That's what it does. It's really good for that. You know,
feel good after it. You know?
Yeah. Well, if you're training on a regular basis, mm-hmm. you're an athlete, that inflammation could be detrimental. And that's just all it is. The more that you can do and do it in all these different ways with diet and exercise and sleep and all these yeah. different they all compound.
Yeah. For me, my philosophy with the gym has always been, and again, it's very basic, and of course there's something like, you know, overtraining, but you know, no such thing as overtraining, just under recovery.
Yeah.
You know, so we train really hard. Everybody's doing 2-3 a days. We do a lot of road work. We do a lot of strength conditioning. You know, we don't get tired in fights. But, you know, sleeping is important. You know, recovery, inflammation management, you know, everything along those lines has to be part of it, or you're going to break your body down to a point where you can't perform.
Do fighters ever give you a hard time for being a little overweight?
No.
No?
Nope.
Never?
Never.
Gaston, you're missing out.
No. Let me,
I don't want to get punished with no pat work.
No pat work. You hear that? No pat work.
But as a guy who understands health and wellness.
100%. I'm the CrossFit affiliate holder.
Right.
And I don't do CrossFit. I'm a human heavy bag. It's what I do. It's literally what I do. I run a gym. I get beat up for a living.
Hold pads.
There's nobody that holds pad. Like, literally, my day can be Kevin Ross, Gaston, Gina Carano, Zoe LaFrasto, Eddie Abasolo, Diego Llamas, little Stephanie, who fucking hits harder or as hard. Jenna, my giant Kiwi. and that's 4 hours of my life every night. My body's adapted to that. I'll sweat like a pig. I won't drop a pound. I don't eat that much. I probably don't eat enough. I live my gym. So absolutely, I'm going to die of a heart attack or I'm going to get my shit together. I don't think I'm morbidly obese, but I certainly don't look like a guy who knows about fitness, but I do. It's just, you have to put yourself first. And it's very difficult for me as a coach to put myself first. I have to, if there's time for me to work out, there's time for me to get somebody else a fight. If there's time for me to work out.
It's
got to
be a diet thing. I mean, there's no way.
He'll tell you.
Well, what do you eat?
In the morning, I'll have a shake. In the afternoon, I'll have a meal. And then I'll eat.
What's that meal, though? It's a generic meal?
No. Like a prepaid meal. Like an out-of-the-cave meal. His food sponsor. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of probably not eating enough. And not working out, doing something that my body's not used to. I would be honest. I would. I live with a physical specimen, you know, that, you know, knows everything I eat. I don't eat enough, and
that doesn't make any sense.
I'm telling you.
But that doesn't make any sense. I mean, like scientifically, it doesn't make any sense.
I guarantee you I take in less than 2,500 calories a day. Guarantee you.
Huh. You should go to a doctor. That doesn't make sense.
I would need time.
You don't have time to go to a doctor.
I live in my gym. I don't. Right. And again, it sounds like excuses, but literally.
Well, it could be a thyroid issue or something.
Could be.
I mean, it seems like.
Well, is this on TV? Because you're making it sound like I'm living a 600-pound life, Joe. No. And it's not exactly that.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, we're talking about health and wellness. Yeah. And, you know, this is the elephant in the room.
What a dick kick.
It's a statement. It's a saying. No, I mean, because. You are such a talented coach, and you know so much about health and fitness that, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. 100%. You know, for fighting, I think it's Kevin will give me grief, you know, but he's really the only one that gets away with it.
Well, Kevin's a hummingbird, right? He can't keep weight on.
No, exactly. But no, so for me, it's a matter of just making time, and I don't make time for myself. I just don't.
Well, that's probably why you're such a good coach, too. Yeah. I mean, the obsession that a coach has, it's such a different obsession.
Yeah. Right?
The obsession that a coach has versus the obsession that a fighter has. I mean, it's a completely different focus. It's an outward focus instead of an inward focus.
And my model is totally different. I don't think we've ever talked about it. I've never taken a dime from a professional fighter, ever.
You don't get paid at all?
Nope.
How do you make – so you make a living off the CrossFit gym?
Off of the gym. Not just the CrossFit gym.
I have gym memberships?
That's it. I've never, in my entire life, Alexis fought Ronda, this kid's got 50 fights, Kevin, run down the list. I've never taken a penny from a professional
fighter. You have to be completely unique in that. I mean, I don't think there's anybody else.
I've
never heard of that before.
No. It would be like if the Golden State Warriors paid the coach directly.
Oh,
who's running the asylum then?
That's an interesting way to look at it.
I don't work for him. Mm-hmm. I work with him.
Right.
Pad work, travel. Like, I won't even take per diem on fight week at the UFC. I mean, I'm going to take Alexis's fights twice a year. She's got a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take her per diem money?
Right.
No, I can't. As a coach, that when I advise him, this is a good fight for you, this is a bad fight for you, this, it can't be motivated by me making money. It just, for me, I can't do that.
Well, I know you put together this you're really well known as not just being a coach, but as training other coaches. I mean, that coaching seminar that you do it every year,
twice a year.
Yep. It is one of the most respected and appreciated seminar series in all of combat sports, because it's one of the things that's missing. How do you run a gym correctly?
Absolutely.
And the fact that you're willing to open up the door to all these other coaches and potential competitors,
right,
and let them do that, it just speaks volumes about your approach.
And anybody can come in. So when I opened up and I started, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was a fighter when I was younger, and then I had to get a real job when my wife got pregnant, and I got into a bunch of other stuff, dignitary protection and all that crazy stuff.
What protection?
Dignitary protection.
What is that?
Executive security, consulting.
Oh, so you're doing like bodyguard work for like...
Yeah, and well...
Dignitaries.
Dignitaries. So
it's a weird word, right?
Yeah.
No, it's the actual word.
No, I know, but it's weird to hear. Dignitary.
Dignitary protection.
So you're working with like foreign agents and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was on the presidential protection detail for Aristide in Haiti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
Yeah. I've had a couple of jobs. If you Google me, you go like five pages back, you'll hear all that other stuff.
Huh.
But because fighting wasn't paying when I was fighting. My wife got pregnant. My son's 21. I think I made $500, the most ever when I fought. And, you know, I had to get a real job. So I was going to school, and I was going to be a cop. And then I met a guy, Tony Scotti, the godfather of defensive tactics driving. He let me in on a course with the State Department. I impressed him, and he made some introductions, and I became a State Department subcontractor and traveled the world and, you know, ran a company, one of the largest private security companies in the world, Steel Foundation. I think they don't think they're around anymore. Retired.
That's so interesting, because whenever I see a gym as big as yours and I know how hard it is to run a gym, I always go, how did that happen? How'd that come together like that? Because, you know, it's just so many gyms come and go, and even good ones. Like, look, with MMA gyms, we lost the Black Zillions. Mm-hmm. That's gone. I don't know what's going on with Team Elevate in Denver. I think
that's where TJ was originally.
Yes, right.
And then now he did his camp here.
Yeah,
so
they're now they're at the what do they call it? The
training
rain.
Lab.
Yeah, Rain R E.
Training so is it, lab.
Does
training.
It have anything to do with the old Rain?
No,
no,
no. Mark is where's Mark?
Mark
Munoz. Yeah, Mark Munoz is somewhere else now. Yeah. Here's how. So I've got just about been open for 9 years with CSA. We had zero members when we started. I've got about 1,300.
So what was the motivation?
The motivation was that I spent. It was always a passion. I was doing martial arts when I was a child. I was fighting. I just wasn't making money doing it. And then I got into that other life and did that for about 15 years. And I was being paid to protect people that could afford it but maybe didn't deserve it for a very long time. And unfortunately, that's the way it works. Because if you can afford it, you probably don't deserve it.
That's a funny way of looking at it.
And it's a true way of looking at it. Yeah. Because I was doing it at the highest level. You know, I wasn't doing security work at the, you know, Kids' Choice Awards standing.
Right.
You know, I
right
was
next to Jim Carrey.
Yeah. For 2 hours saying I'm Jim Carrey's bodyguard.
Right.
So it's one of those things where I saw it at the very highest level. And it just turned me off after a while, because you know, you're being a babysitter to people who have money,
right?
You know, even with the biggest threats, you know, from Iraq, Afghanistan, Haiti, run down the list. It wasn't about helping people, and I always wanted to help people.
Yeah,
so
I get it.
When I opened the gym, that was the goal, was to help people, and it turned into that gym. And this is why I feel that our gym model is successful, is because tonight at 5:30 during a boxing class, my professional fighters are going to be in class with everyone else. There's no pro team only practice. Everybody trains together. everybody works together. The model is for people. You want to get in shape? Wonderful. You're going to get into shape. You want to have stress relief? Wonderful. You want to become a fighter? Wonderful. I don't have a fight team practice tryout or any of that. You come to the gym, you put in the work, you support the team, you train side by side with world champions, you get better, you have a good time. It's a huge family gym. It's a huge family environment. And the mixture of the self-defense and the fighting and the fitness, one doesn't need the other. So unlike like an AKA, and I love Javi, but the gym is about the fighters. Yeah, and if fighters lose,
that's a fight gym.
People go out the back door.
Right.
For me, I can have a fighter lose. My membership's not going to matter. My people are still going to come. They're still going to train. They're still going to support. They're still going to buy tickets. And that's been the recipe. And because the gym is that way, it's allowed me to have this model where I don't charge pro fighters.
So when you opened, that is really incredible and very, very unique. Mm-hmm. But when you opened, like, how'd you get people to go?
Well, I'm going to sound full of myself here. I'm very good at it.
Right, and but I'm saying, so like, if you're Ernesto Hoost,
sure,
and you open up a gym, everybody's going to go, hey, I want to go train with Mr. Perfect. That's Ernesto Hoost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, for a guy like you to have such a massive, massive gym and become one of the most respected gyms in the world.
Right.
Like, it's a crazy path.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so for me, I think part of it was just, I'm going to use a generic term, hustle. You know, like, you look at Thai boxing coaches, like you said, they just aren't very... The Thais here in America, they don't take it seriously. It's not the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in the stadium, they don't care. So, you know, other than Jong Sinan, name a Thai coach that's coaching high-level fighters Thai boxing. They're just not. They're retired. It's boring. It's not real. It's fun. It's not a real thing. For me, I treated it like a real thing, and I hustled my ass off, and I made connections, and I worked. And the reason that I could get so many people on Lion Fight is because I sold fucking tickets, because I knew how the game was played. I learned how to work with the judges. I knew who was judging fights and how to score and how to deal. And so all of that, whereas a lot of coaches don't ever kind of get out of their own way. Mm-hmm. They're so in their mantra of, you know, well, I'm really good at what I do, and, you know, this is traditional Thai boxing, and this is how it should be scored. No, I'm every day.
We've always adjusted. We've had fights like, in, hey, you got to box, man. There's boxing judges out there. You got to box.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe like we were in LA, it's like, oh, the judges are more like Thai, so you can do that.
Clinch.
You can do your thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So we've always adjusted.
Yeah, so I think part of it is just it's drive, it's hustle, and it's determination to be successful. And that's, you know, for me, you know, that's what I have focused on with the gym, and it's grown. And like I said, we started at one location. It was 3,500 square feet. I had zero students. And in 3 years, we had 400.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's hard to get 100 students.
Yeah.
You know, especially in jiu-jitsu schools. Jiu-jitsu schools, that's the number. That's the magical number. Yeah. You have 100 students. Everyone's like, oh, now you're making X amount per month because you had 100 people paying X amount per month. You can actually make a living.
It's the diversity, right? So what happens is that when people find out that maybe MMA isn't for them, they can go into my fitness program. When people find out that maybe fitness isn't for them, they can go into my Krav Maga program.
Yeah.
They find out that Krav isn't for them. And the bottom line is I don't treat it like any kind of bullshit either.
You have a Krav Maga program
as
well?
I do. I have a huge Krav Maga program. Huge Krav Maga program. And it's the same thing. It's like, oh, Krav Maga. Listen, all Krav Maga is combat sports.
I'm a fan of Krav Maga.
Yeah.
What Krav Maga is martial arts.
That's it.
It's like they've just developed self-defense scenarios, and they use real martial arts.
That's it.
And real Muay Thai, real karate, real judo.
And we do it even more combat sports. Such as all of my Kravists have to go through grappling classes. All the Kravists have to learn our combos. The Krav Maga,
they call themselves Kravists?
That's the term, is Kravist. Yeah. It's Kravist. But like,
do you have any Kravist dignitaries?
No, I don't. But I have taught. I did once teach Krav Maga to the Bolivian Secret Service.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was good.
I didn't even know the story.
So they guard the coke.
Yeah, exactly.
Some narco shit.
hey, I got that's why.
You know, I guarantee you, dude, listen to this podcast. It's going to be a bunch of pro fighters that, this motherfucker just say he doesn't charge? Did he?
Hey, wait, what's going on?
I need to learn some Muay Thai in California.
I'm paying $250 a month for my gym. What is going on?
Yeah. Well, yeah, run down the list and the percentage of the purse and then the sponsorships and and all that. Pad work and this.
I remember one time with this gym, I heard a friend from a gym that they were paying, you know, like $300 a month and like paying. And like, I grew up with him, so I don't know that. I was like, Karen, you wouldn't believe what's going on over there, man.
People are
They're robbing them.
They have to pay money for work.
Yeah, no.
Well, it's, dude, it's that's like, well, very,
that's,
very
that's how it is.
Very selfless of you. Very impressive. I'm very impressed by that. I think that's amazing.
I try.
You get a lot of kudos in the combat sports world, but I think that might be one where you deserve the most. That's very, very impressive. That's incredible.
Well, and I love these kids. I mean, this is my son.
You do. I know you do.
And I do. And Zoila, that's my daughter. And Kevin, that's my son. And Stephanie. And so, you know, it becomes a family. And that's the thing. It's like these people, I get all the time, it's like, oh, what do I need to do to train at CSA? You need to move there. Do you have dorms? Nope. I don't have dorms. You want to train with me, you got to move here. And you got to want it.
Dorms is when it gets sketchy. You got a bunch of weird dudes living in your gym. No bueno.
Yeah.
No, but you got to really, really, really want to train with me because you got to figure out where to live. You got to figure out what to do.
Like Diego Lamas, Glory kickboxing fighter.
Yeah,
he showed up he messaged Kevin one time. I think from what I hear, the story was just, and Kevin doesn't reply that. Like I don't know. Like he hasn't replied to just anybody like that. They were talking a little bit. He's like, oh yeah, you should come down. Like you know, for a couple weeks, whatever. Shows up. He's like, hey, I just moved here to the doors. From Mexico.
Brought his wife. Shut down his gym.
Yeah. It's like, I just moved here. Yeah.
And
you told me I had to move here, so here I am. Yeah. He's part of the team now.
What does that feel like to you? Because that's heavy responsibility, man.
Yeah.
Listen, man. Here's my philosophy is when a fighter wins, they did their job. When a fighter loses, I didn't. And it's that simple. It's literally that simple.
It's not that simple because they could have fought a better fighter and you couldn't have helped them.
No, to me, like so right now.
Okay, you're training a guy who fights Anderson Silva.
No, I'll use Alexis. Alexis fought Caitlin. And I thought, bottom line, I think Alexis won that fight. I can see why she didn't. She wears her fights on her face like, you know, like Zoila does. Like literally, if you blow at Alexis, she swells up.
It was a very close fight.
Yeah.
Exactly. But if you look at her the wrong way, she's going to swell up. Right. And I know that. So for me, the game plan was very simple, very specific. There were pieces of the game plan that worked. The right leg kick moved her where we needed to move her. The left body kick was also part of the game plan to take away what we needed. Alexis wasn't throwing it. Alexis didn't throw it. Whose fault is that? Mine or Alexis's? In my mind, it's my fault because I didn't see that wasn't going to happen. She's thrown it in other fights. So what did I do wrong? How did I miss that half of the game plan that would have won this fight very easily, in my opinion, 100%? It didn't happen. I can sit back and be mad at the fighter, or I can sit back and say, you missed this in training. You need to figure out how to avoid this. You need to learn from it. And that's what I do every single fight.
When you're watching fights and you're at home and you see like a guy – one of the things that drives me nuts when I'm doing commentary, like see a guy start to soften some dude up with leg kicks, starts to get that leg buckling a little bit, and then inexplicably they stop.
There's a reason they stop throwing it. They're not conditioning their shin, and they're hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. 100%.
It could be. It could be they hurt him with a right hand, and then they got punch happy.
That too, but most of the time when I see people stop kicking on a leg kick that works, it's because they're feeling it in their leg too, because they don't condition their shins properly. That's when I've talked to people about it. And so for me, you're absolutely right. You rock somebody with the right hand, you go head hunting, 100%. But a lot of the time people do not condition their legs. They don't, you know, now you've got everybody going after the calf kick.
Right.
And if you don't know how to throw a calf kick and if you don't know how to deal with, if you go after a calf kick, invariably you're going to catch shin a lot of the time. So if you're not conditioning your leg, you land a couple calf kicks, but you know, when you talk about Mighty Mouse, you know, he landed a beautiful calf kick in that first round. That's what hurt Henry.
Yeah.
But he caught some shin, too. And I guarantee you that didn't help his
– He broke his foot.
That didn't help – yeah.
Mighty Mouse broke his foot in that fight. He's got videos of it on right now. It's
I saw it. It was like swollen.
Like a fat guy's foot.
And that's very easy to do if you know how to check. Literally, if you check properly.
I'm not scared of calf kicks at all. Like, I know I'm just going to check it. Like I might eat one. Like Matt Schnell, for example, like, he comes down and he trains with us. He loves to throw calf kicks. And I'm like, all right, throw it. Like I'm just gonna check it every time. And I'll counter properly.
If you know how to check a leg kick and you know how to check a calf kick, you're going to hurt the person doing it 100% of the time.
What do you recommend for shin conditioning?
Nothing crazy. Progressive, dense contact. So starting with a heavy bag and then a more densely packed heavy bag, and then eventually you can get to a sandbag.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. We've got three different levels of bag in the gym, and we've got standard bag, densely packed bag, and then sandbag.
Sandbag, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Damn, who makes a sandbag?
Nobody does. You make it.
Kevin made ours.
Kevin made ours, yeah.
So just go to the hardware store?
Yeah, no kicking sticks or anything like that.
No.
So what do you, how do you, now, what kind of liner do you use to fill up with sand?
So it's a standard, so you can put a liner in, or if you've got a really good bag, then, you know, it'll be okay. But you put in basically a garbage bag, a well-done garbage bag.
Like and then, one of them lawn bags, contractor bags.
And then you don't want to go just sand. It's still stuffing and sand. Stuffing and sand. Stuffing and sand. And then you build from there. And then it'll be denser at the bottom. Yeah. And then you start kicking higher. And then you work your way down the bag. And it's not even about cracking it. It's just about conditioning the shin as evenly as possible.
Just deadening it up and putting those little calcium deposits all over
it. As evenly as possible. That's why I'm not a big fan of the rolling and the hitting, and because all you're doing is you're creating these little micro breaks and fractures in variable spots. It's not spreading across the shin the same way when you have a kicking target like a bag.
It also seems like if you're throwing kicks, it's going to be a more realistic application. You know, it's like throwing kicks on something and hardening your shins up just seems... I've seen guys do that with like Coke bottles, you know. I've seen all that stuff. It just doesn't.
Doesn't work. I've never done that in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you use that sandbag.
Use the sandbag. Yeah.
How often do you use it?
When especially, I use it even more so when I have Muay Thai or kickboxing fights coming up. But I'll use it every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just
doesn't have to be something that's hours at a time.
Just drills and, you know.
It's amazing how much that low calf kick has made its way into MMA and how much it changes fights.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Thai boxing.
I believe Benson Henderson was the first one to use it back then when he was a champion. Or even before that. Yeah.
In Thai boxing, it's considered kind of dirty. Yeah. You know?
Really?
Yeah. That's why you don't see it as much in Thai
boxing. It's considered dirty.
It's a little dirty,
Wow.
Yeah. That's why you don't see it that much. It's like, you know, it's low hanging fruit. It's cheap. Mm-hmm.
But it works.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Why would it be that? It's weird how people...
Well, the Thai boxing scoring is different in Thailand than in here.
Well, you know, like, for the longest time in jiu-jitsu, leg locks were dirty.
Yeah.
Like, people would go crazy if you went for a leg lock. They would boo until you released it. People would scream at you. Coaches would say, just let it go. Just let it go. Yeah. Let the leg lock go. Yeah.
Ricardo almost had that leg lock in his fight. Ricardo Ramos.
Yes.
It was deep.
The only thing is he tried to make that adjustment and go behind the armpit.
Yeah, and the guy just got off.
Well, it was just... He was doing it like they were grappling.
Yeah.
You know, which is a thing that people do. Mm-hmm. You know, you forget that the guy can just stand up. Like, you think that he's going to stay engaged with you. Yeah. It's a common mistake that people do.
Yeah.
But he just made an adjustment, and, you know, the guy he fought was good, man. Yeah. You know?
It was a close fight.
Real close fight.
Good fight. Very good matchup. Very good matchup. Like,
there was a lot of those Saturday night. There's a lot of, like, really good matchups.
What was the last one in the prelims? I was there at the fights.
Was it Moicano?
No.
The prelims. That wasn't in the prelims?
No, that was in the main card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I got
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Cub Swanson. Yeah. Jesus Christ, Moicano looked good.
Yeah.
Holy
Dropped
shit.
Him with a jab.
But he's a fucking real technician, man.
And he's big for featherweight.
Yeah, for
he's
45.
He's like 5'11".
Yeah, but looks big.
Yeah.
You know, when you stand
big
next
frame,
to him,
big
he looks
frame.
Like he's 170 pounds when he's in the inside the actual cage itself.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
He's just very technical, man. Like, everything he does, there's no sloppiness to him. Mm-hmm. Like, everything. Yeah. And then when
calculate
he
it.
Dropped him with a jab, I mean, it looked like he hit him with a fucking straight right hand on the button.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and that's Cub Swanson.
Cub was coming in at the same time, too, which is
true.
But he's so long, and he's, boom, stiff arm.
It's just it was the way it snapped in there too. It was just perfect, perfect timing. Yeah. And then to take Cubs back that quick and get him in that rear naked choke like that, like wow,
impressive.
Moicano's no joke.
Absolutely not.
The level of talent is so high right now. It's really fascinating because there's guys that aren't even in the top 15 that look like world champions from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, no, the adaption is – you know, I say it all the time. Again, I'm known as a Muay Thai coach, but the best Muay Thai strikers, you know, don't have the best success in UFC striking. You know, it's so, you know, the most decorated, best Muay Thai guys and gals, you know, Joanna, you know, you have to put her up there. Valentina, you have to put her up there. These are legit world champions, not somebody who went to Florida and won the IKF Classic or something like that.
Right, right.
But on the guy side, you look at like the two best Muay Thai guys ever, you know, you look at Shane Campbell. I don't know if you know Shane's background, but Shane Campbell literally was a world beater in Muay Thai from Canada. His last fight with the UFC, he got dropped with a body shot and got cut because he could never really sit down on his strikes.
Because he's always worried about the takedowns.
Exactly.
And then there's the little gloves as well.
Exactly. Hakeem, you know, Hakeem, world beater in Muay Thai. His first fight out.
World champion.
Yeah. It was his first fight out. He got 20 some odd seconds. He got knocked out with
little
gloves.
Well, how about Gokhan Saki?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's, and Roundtree's a bad motherfucker. No taking away from Roundtree. Yeah. And he hits hard. But it's crazy watching Gokhan get cracked and knocked out with one shot. It's like, wow.
Little gloves definitely even out the playing field.
You have to respect the little gloves, and you have to respect the other influences in MMA. Okay? And again, I'm probably one of the few coaches that'll, like, you know, fixate on losses and try to really, really learn from them. When you watched his second MMA fight where he lost, right? The Gaston.
Yes.
And he, in that moment, came out very slow twitch. He was very almost McGregor-esque. He was going through a little phase that I didn't pick up on in camp. And he comes out, and this kid that he's fighting is a karate kid. Super talented kid, right? And literally, the speed at which they were fighting, stylistically, was different. He was in second gear, and this kid was in fifth gear.
You agree with this?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the motivation behind your changing of your style a little bit?
Like I said, I was going through a lot at that time.
Okay, right.
And I just, you know,
stuff.
I remember like just walking out. I just wasn't like there.
Focused.
Yeah. Like I said, like my last kickboxing fight, the fight before that, I just felt, even the spinning back elbow one, I just felt at home. I was like, yeah, you can see me smiling, like right, you know.
Dude, that spinning back elbow might be the greatest spinning back elbow KO in the history of MMA.
Thank you, man.
That shit was ridiculous. We played it on this podcast at least five times.
he's
like, you want to see a spinning elbow? Watch this.
I heard you talking about it with Kevin Lee.
Dude, the smack. When that elbow hit his jaw, you're like, here it is. Watch, hear it. Oh, come on, man. I mean, that's the greatest spinning elbow of all time.
I agree.
It just is. I mean, it can't get any better.
And he's done that.
That can't get better.
Eight times. Yeah. He's done that eight times. I'm not talking about landing it. I'm talking about finishing fights with that elbow.
Oh, I know he has, but that's the best of all the ones he's ever landed.
That's the best way to land it. That's the best way to land it. When they're coming in, their punch.
Let me see that one more time.
You see, I slipped the jab.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Well, you threw that kick first.
Yeah.
Boom.
He's coming in with a jab. I slip it.
Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He's not expecting it. He's coming in with a strike, and he's not expecting to get hit.
Dude, that is so ridiculous.
Yeah, but now everybody, he literally changed Muay Thai in America. He didn't invent that, but it was the first time anybody saw it.
Yeah.
And amateur tournaments now, like in California, you cannot throw a spinning elbow until after your fourth amateur fight because of him.
Wow.
Because it's so it does so much damage. It does so much damage. And the way he throws it does damage. Like if you see, like John is throwing it, like John Jones throws it, but he hits the forearms because he throws it horizontally. Mm-hmm. As tall as John is, if John wants to finish people with that elbow, he needs to come down with it.
Mm.
And he needs to arc down and drop his weight. Even if they're shelled, he'll split down the middle. The angle at which he throws, if you're taller than him, he's going to come underneath. And if you're shorter than him or the same height, he's going to come
I'll also throw
down.
It like at the same time as I'm throwing a right hand, and I'll just go through.
So
I'll throw it either way. I'll go either way.
Yeah, he's knocked people out on both sides. It's not just one side.
Mm.
You know, it's very, very effective weapon.
I've always felt like the best people that transition from kickboxing to MMA are the really explosive ones, which is one of the reasons why Crow Cop did so well in MMA, not just because he dedicated him to dedicated himself to it, which was a huge factor, but also because when you watch Crow Cop in K1, he was a exploder. He would like take pot shots at people and just he would have fast twitch. Yeah, and he would have a naked kick or a naked punch. Like he wasn't like a guy who's like throwing a lot of technical stuff and setting things up. He would whap you know, out of nowhere, throw full power full because he was so fast. And that translates extremely well to MMA, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the pace of Muay Thai, it can be a little slower.
Yeah.
So when you're dealing with, like, with his fight, like I said, he's coming in, you know, relaxed and slow twitch and thinking timing and bouncing a little bit. And this kid is a karate kid, and he's immediately, like you said, flap, right? You don't see it coming.
Right.
You get caught, right? So that's where I think strikers that listen, and no disrespect to that kid, I think that kid is one of the best, one of the Brandon, I can't remember his last name, one of the best.
What's his name?
His name is Brandon, I forget his last name.
You don't remember him?
I can't remember his last name.
Most people, when they lose a guy, that name's etched in their fucking head forever.
Nah.
You let it go?
You got to. You got to let it go, man. But that kid, he's a talented
kid. I'll hunt you if you don't.
Yeah, we'll find his name. What's his name, Jamie? Just pull up Gaston's Wikipedia. Sure, we'll find his name.
LaRocco. There it is. LaRocco.
Yeah, that kid is an uber-talented kid.
Yes, I was very impressed by him.
Absolutely. And, you know, he might not have Gaston's look. He might not have some of what Gaston brings to the table, and he hasn't really caught on since. Super-talented kid. He wasn't disrespected in that fight. He just wasn't there was no film on him. We didn't know who he was. His style was not anticipated, and he came out super slow, and he got fucking caught.
MMA. Do you train much with karate stylists or someone
not
who's
really
got that? Because it seems to me that it's like when you have like a Wonder Boy Thompson style, there's something to that. You know, there's something to that that's like it's very weird to deal with.
Yeah,
it's a different
when
thing.
When people are unorthodox in general, it's just so hard to like – really,
Raymond
like,
Daniels is another one.
It's hard to really like get going with people like that. And like Karen was saying, I come from a background like a 5-round Muay Thai fight is different.
Right.
Like I normally, and he can agree with me. Like my first few fights, I take the first round off. I'm just like, all right, let's get going. Let's see what he's got.
Right.
It's like we have
feel him out.
We got 5 rounds to work here.
Right. Yeah.
That's where like Kevin's had the most trouble with kickboxing is because he's used to 5 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
the first round is just kind of feel him out.
Right.
You know?
And right.
So as coaches, it's our job to change that. And that's I struggle with that a lot with my Thai guys because, again, I'll make like Zoila. I'll make Gaston. I have these guys fight Muay Thai fights as well because it's definitely going to help your striking. But if you fixate on that rhythm, that footwork, that timing in MMA, that's where you're going to have the most trouble. So those karate stylists are going to give you trouble, and the wrestlers are going to give you trouble because you're never going to be able to sit down on anything.
Well, Michael Venom Page is probably one of the most exciting guys in Bellator
today.
His
last fight? Oh,
dude.
My God. Not the boxing one.
No,
the MMA
fight.
Yeah.
He's a monster.
Rickles? Oh, my God.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
He's, but it's that style. It's that did you ever see him fight Raymond Daniels in Point Karate?
No, I didn't.
There's some videos of them fighting on – it's crazy. They're just sprinting at each other.
Yeah.
they're so fucking fast. But I've said for a while that I think there's something really good to that ability
Absolutely.
To blitz,
yeah.
especially when you're dealing with little gloves and you know and MMA rules. I just think that that's a really important skill that a lot of people don't have, that ability to blitz. And if you have that sort of slow first round Thai style, here's the two of these guys. Look at them.
Oh, damn.
I mean, this is like fast twitch muscle fiber heaven.
This?
I want to say this is – yeah, there it is. Yeah, so 7 years ago.
They want to take each other's heads off.
So fast. But they're trying to score points. You know, this is such a different game.
Yeah.
You know, I did a little bit of this stuff when I was competing. It's so different.
The range is so beautiful
fighting.
To watch.
Yeah.
It's
also
crazy.
They stop it with every strike.
Oh, they stop it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Every time you touch each other, they stop it. And they score a point. So it's super unrealistic in terms of an actual fight. And the thought process behind it is nonsense. The thought process was that you should be able to kill somebody with one punch.
Right.
And then all you have to do is touch them and then stop. That could have killed a guy. It's nonsense. But the benefit to it is much like the benefit of learning Taekwondo early.
Mm-hmm.
You learn Taekwondo early, Because you develop leg dexterity that you would never develop if you threw in leg kicks and punches and takedowns and all those other things. It's very rare that someone goes through just a traditional martial arts or a traditional MMA background where you're just learning everything, takedowns, leg kicks, all those things. And you ever develop kicks the way someone who's like a real high-level Taekwondo practitioner does. But those Taekwondo guys, they have so many holes in their games because of that. And it's the same thing with karate guys. But that skill that these guys have of being able to touch each other first. I mean, if you add all that other stuff like Venom Page has, you add submissions, add leg kicks, add all, then you got a crazy combination.
Yeah, that's part of what we've had a lot of success with in our striking is that, Muay Thai, but at the end of the day, our boxing is, we'll box. It's Western boxing. You know, we'll do Dutch combos. We'll do Thai clinch, Thai elbows. But we'll also adapt our striking for MMA. And most Muay Thai coaches aren't really thinking how – you know, the MMA guy, like, you don't throw leg kicks when somebody's coming forward in an MMA fight. You're going to get taken down. You know, they have to be backing up. You have to stop them with something. Most Thai coaches aren't going to go out of their way to learn the sport of MMA to become an effective MMA striker.
Right.
Because, I'm like Saki. Listen, I know his Roundtree's coach, Jason Park, who's out of boxing, works with Brian Popejoy, tremendous gym down here in Southern California. And Gogan throws that blind leg kick, and he throws it from that side, and it leaves his head open. They planned for that. That was a planned counter. That wasn't just luck of the draw. Mm-hmm. That's an MMA coach with a solid Muay Thai background who's understanding striking for MMA versus someone like Gogan, who, again, one of the best strikers to ever be in the UFC, who hasn't really adapted, unlike a Crow Cop, to MMA yet.
Well, it's also Gokhan came into the UFC with how many fights? I mean, how many fights has that guy had in kickboxing and Muay Thai? And just
but how many MMA fights?
It was like 0-1 when he came in, right?
Yeah, I think he was 0-1.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you'll get that a lot with people like Jermaine. When I first started training Jermaine De Rondami, I'm the one that brought her over here. She was 0-1. She got her arm broken by Vanessa Porto in a Florida fight. Right.
And how are you pronouncing her last name?
De Rondami.
Is that how she says it?
Yeah.
Because everybody says De Rondami.
Yeah, no. De Rondami.
I've heard her say De Rondami.
Yeah. Yeah. She just lets people say it how they want. But
why did she decide to not fight Cyborg? What was that all about? Because she won the title, beat Holly Holm, and then said, fuck that. I'm not fighting that. I'm not fighting that steroid cheat is basically what she said. She called her a steroid cheat.
Well, you're gonna say what you're going to say in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. So – you know, when I met her, she was 0-1. She was like the most dominant female kickboxer of all time.
She knocked out a dude.
Yeah.
See that fight?
Yeah, absolutely.
I did.
Flatlined a dude with her right hand.
Crazy.
She was training with Sean Tompkins, and then Sean passed away, and her manager at the time said, hey, she needs a place to go, so brought her over. We met and helped her get her visa. I got her signed with Strikeforce. And,
she fought at the Playboy Mansion.
Did a few different things. And her and Miriam never really got along. So I could see early on, her and Miriam never sparred.
They drilled a couple times.
Never sparred once while I had both of them at the gym.
That seems kind of crazy. Yeah.
Well, then we're going to fast forward that over to the Cyborg thing. At the end of the day, I feel like in that moment, Jermaine achieved what she wanted to achieve. And for whatever reason, whoever was advising her at the time, I think she should have taken that fight. I think she should have done that fight. She wasn't with me at the time. I can't judge what happened.
The Cyborg fight.
Yeah, the Cyborg
fight. Well, she had an injury apparently to her thumb. That she said, I interviewed her after the Holly Holm fight. She said she needed to get surgery on her thumb.
Right.
But then she changed the story later and said she's never going to fight Cyborg.
I don't understand that. I mean, but you if you're going to call her a cheat, okay, she was a cheat before you even went to the 145-pound division. You knew inevitably this is what was going to happen.
Right.
So I question that as a person, nice girl, you know.
What do you think it is then? The only thing that I would say is she doesn't want to fight her because she doesn't think she could beat her.
I definitely think that that's got to be in somebody's head. I can't say.
How could it not be?
I can't say that
it's fucking Cyborg. How could it not be?
Yeah,
she's fucking terrifying.
Like when they presented the Cyborg fight to me for Miriam, I said yes right away. I said yes, we'll do it
in kickboxing,
in Muay Thai. Yes,
right.
I would not have said yes in MMA yet.
Right,
I just would not have.
Right,
it's not going to go well. It's just not for someone like that. And Jermaine does not have enough experience in MMA. If Jermaine is on her back, she's not getting up. She's just not. Amanda right. Nunes showed that. People show mm-hmm. that. She doesn't have that skill yet.
Right.
So just say, hey, I'm not ready for this yet. Maybe. I don't know.
But you can't say that when you're the world champion.
I get it. Yeah.
So has she hasn't fought since that, right? No. Since she beat Holly.
So she's talking about fighting again. And like I said, we're friendly. I mean, there's no bad blood. It just
did
wasn't.
Did she get that thumb fixed?
I believe she did, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's just, it wasn't a good fit for the gym, you know, for her and I. But she, again, she's still under contract. She got the surgery. I wish her well. I think she's going back to 35. From what I understand.
Well, if she can go to 35, she should.
Yeah.
Because Cyborg can't.
Yeah.
There's no.
You seen that video of her cutting weight?
Dude.
Oh, my God.
Look, I've stood next to her before. I've shook her hand. She's gigantic. She weighs $185 if she weighs a pound.
Yeah.
I mean, she's walking around very, very heavy and thick. And so she obviously diets down, gets in the 170-pound range, diets down a little bit more, gets in the 165-pound range. And then begins the dehydration process. But she is fucking enormous when she gets into that cage.
Yeah.
Then the problem is California with that 10% rule. Mm.
There's no way she makes it.
There's no way she makes that. I think that is just a recommendation, though.
The first time it's a recommendation.
But there's a couple of guys that weighed in the next day heavier than the 10%, and they had to fight heavier.
Didn't she fight in California, though, after the rule? It would be interesting to know what she weighed in at on Saturday.
That's very interesting because they don't give that information out. I wish they would, like boxing does, like HBO. They'll show you what they got into.
That's cool. Yeah.
I read yesterday that California was going to start releasing the fight day weights.
Andy Foster, that guy who's the head of the California State Athletic Commission, he's on the ball. That guy is on the ball. He's so ahead of the curve. You know, with all that shit, with implementation of additional weight classes, with catching people doing steroids, with just, I love that guy. I'm a big fan.
No, Andy has been great for the sport in California. And when people talk about, oh, Dana's going to change the weigh-in times and this and this and this, I don't believe that Andy Foster would let that happen in his lifetime.
Well, here's what I think. If you're going to have this weigh-in thing early in the morning, let them weigh in all day till the fucking limit. If it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon where they're supposed to weigh in, have it cut it off at 3:30 so you know for sure whether or not someone's going to make it.
Yeah.
But the problem is you wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, you only have 2 hours. That's not as the same as being able to do it all throughout the day, where your body would normally just lose a little bit of weight anyway.
It changes everything, that timing, and that's where you look at the numbers. It's like 2 year span before they changed the timing, X amount of people missed weight. 2 year span since, this many people.
Well, people
missed
push
weight.
It. They do push it. You give them more time, and they are going to push it if they know that they can rehydrate longer, which is the idea. Is that it's safer because you can rehydrate from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. instead of from 4 p.m. on.
Yeah.
I just think that give them all the time they need, and fuck, 1FC's laid out the groundwork. Just look at what they did with their rehydration tests or hydration tests, rather, and implement that.
I think cutting weight is just silly. Like, I was talking to my girlfriend about it, and she was like, wait, you guys, she didn't know much about fighting at the time, obviously, but she was like, you guys make this weight, but the next day you're not the same weight, so why not just not weigh in?
Yeah.
Like, it's stupid.
It is stupid.
She's like, it sounds really stupid. That's not what you fight at.
It's sanctioned cheating. Yeah. It's sanctioned cheating.
Absolutely.
And it's cheating at a much higher scale even than PEDs. Yeah. If you get two people and they both weigh 135, but they're both, they're both totally hydrated, and one of them has been doing steroids and one of them hasn't been doing steroids, the difference will be far less than if one person weighs in at 135 but then balloons up to 160, and then gets into that octagon at 160, but there's no PEDs involved. Well, that's a much greater advantage than someone who's doing some sort of a testosterone thing or something.
Especially with more time now to rehydrate. It's still not enough time, right?
You
know, the 48 hours, whatever the current
study compromised.
Is. Yeah, you're absolutely
compromised. The benefit might outweigh, the benefit of being so much larger might outweigh being compromised.
Well, absolutely. And if you look at the previous record, it was, a losing record for fighters that missed weight when it was a 5 o'clock weigh-in. And now it's a winning record for fighters that miss weight and an 11 a.m. weigh-in because they have more time to recover.
Dude, if I was running shit, I would fix that first. That would be the first thing I would fix. The next thing I would fix is judging.
Yeah.
The idea that you have win bonus and loss bonus, but you haven't fixed the fucking judging is goddamn crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. I just throw my hands up sometimes now. I can't even say anything anymore because I've had so many rants about it, and they've gone nowhere, and nothing gets done, and you still have people that literally have never applied an armbar in their life. Yeah. They've never taken a punch in the face in their life. They've never thrown a kick in competition in their life, and they're judging these fights. Mm-hmm. And they don't even train. I mean, even forget competition. Just fucking have a love of the sport. They don't even have a love of the sport. They're just doing it as a job. It's crazy. It is crazy when you have a limited supply, or an unlimited supply of people who are martial arts experts, who would make fantastic judges all throughout the world. Mm-hmm. You have so many, you have thousands of them.
Yeah.
I mean, how many fucking people are giant martial arts fans that are on, whether it's SureDog or MixedMartialArts.com or, you know, fill in the name of the website.
Right.
There's so many people that are engrossed in martial arts all day long. That's what they live for. And they just debate whether or not Cejudo should have won round two, or Mighty Mouse should have won it with effective striking, and there's like this real comprehensive conversation going on. These people that are judging the fights can't even have that conversation. Yeah. If you had a conversation with half the fucking UFC judges, if I had them here and I sat them down and I said, you know, let's watch a fight and you tell me what you think's going on here. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me what you think is better. Tell me what you think. How hard, what does a low calf kick feel like? You know, what does it feel like when you get hit with a liver shot? You know, when is a guy safe in a triangle and when is he in danger? How can you protect yourself?
Who's dominating what position? Right, you know? When is a guy just laying on top to breathe and rest in the third round? Or when are they like doing damage? Like,
Can you recognize the progression? Do you understand what a guy has to do to get out of the guard?
Yeah.
Do you understand what a guy has to do to escape from an arm triangle? Mm-hmm. If you don't, you have no fucking business putting these guys' livelihoods and their records and literally half their earning. You have no business. Half the fucking money. If you have a, if you're getting 50 and 50, this motherfucker costs you $50,000 by not knowing anything. That is insane to me. That should be fixed. And why is there three judges? Why three? Says who? Because boxing's always done it that way? What are we, fucking copycats?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. We should have five. Yeah. Have five judges.
Glory's been doing that.
You have a much greater chance of getting it right with five judges. Yeah. Have five judges make these motherfuckers take tests. First of all, that's one thing. Second, why 10-point must system? What the fuck is that? That's some boxing shit. Why are you using a boxing scoring system for something that involves takedowns, submissions, leg kicks, punches, elbows, knees? Mm-hmm. Like, there's too many things. There's way too many things. It's a crazy system.
Absolutely. It's what I get the most the discussions for Muay Thai. It's the same thing.
I mean,
it's the same exact judging.
Same exact problem.
Same problem. It's not there. You know, what's worth more? What's not worth more?
How do they judge in Thailand?
Well, it depends. Now in Thailand, they're starting to just kind of score things evenly
because they want to do just 3 3-minute rounds.
Yeah, they want to do. Yeah. They want Muay Thai in the Olympics, right? So you can't score the body kick more than a leg kick in the Olympics, right? Yeah. The weapons have to be equal is what they want from the International Olympic Committee.
Mm. Because it used to be like, I've been to Thailand 3 times now, and I'll go to Lumpini or Raja, and, you know, these guys were like, and sometimes it would be foreigners, foreigners fighting against Thais, and like they would like punch and, you know, and do all this low kicks and stuff like that, and then the Thai will throw 2 body kicks and they'll win the round. Because the body kick scores more.
Right. And the Thai scoring, I mean, it's designed for gambling, right? So
it's
one of those things where, you know, people scream, it's not traditional Thai, it's not traditional Thai, it's not traditional Thai. At the end of the day, no one's saying that traditional Thai is right either. The body kick should not be worth more than a punch to the mouth.
Well, I believe they've changed that now.
They have,
At IFMA.
At IFMA, they have.
Everything goes,
counts the same.
It's just damage. Yeah.
Damage, right. Yeah. Hard shots.
Yeah, hard shots versus, you know.
But is it even that subjective? Like, what is a hard shot and what's not a hard shot?
It is here, especially because it's the ABC.
Yeah.
You know, Adelaide Bird judged Kevin's fight with Yamato. She did. So.
Yeah. Nice, nice lady. That's what I always say about Adelaide Bird. Yeah. Nice lady.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So I always smile when I see her. Yeah.
It was my hello to her.
I remember
that fight.
Nice lady.
I remember that fight.
That shit drives me crazy, though.
Yeah.
And literally, it's my opinion is that she gave the fight to Yamato because I guarantee you she didn't know that elbows were supposed to mean more just because Kevin was bleeding.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's all she could see.
Yeah. Right. I remember it was my 21st birthday. I walked off because I thought Kevin won. And then I'm like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah, literally, there was one round where he threw seven body kicks
yeah.
in a row in unanswered. A row.
Yeah.
Just boom, 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 boom. And he had some blood on him and he lost the fight. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And it's not this. Here's the thing. I've been saying this forever. Nothing changes.
Yeah.
Right. You know what? I was really surprised this past weekend. I was talking to Daniel Cormier and I said, I think the stupidest fucking rule is that 12-6 elbow. And he said, I like that rule. And I said, really? I said, you don't think that 12-6 elbow should be legal? He goes, you ever get hit by a 12-6 elbow on the ground? I said, no, I haven't. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, believe me, man, it sucks. Yeah. I go, but doesn't every elbow on the ground suck?
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that just getting hit this way, you know, just a regular elbow sucks. On the ground, your head's planted.
Yeah.
You're not going anywhere. You're just taking
it. It isn't legal in Muay Thai either from the clinch when you're going 12-6. I believe
it's not legal?
It's not legal.
No, it's not.
But you can in the air, right? You can jump
it's
up
not
in the
legal in the U.S.
It's in the U.S. the 12-6 elbow because it's ABC.
Wayne Parr sent me a video of him leaping through the air,
like,
and literally
over, climbing the
literally
tree,
elbowing someone in the back of the head with it. It's like this doesn't count because when you're in the air, digital becomes analog. He sent me this ridiculous.
I saw that
explanation.
Miriam's fight at IFMA, she ended up getting her fight. She was the gold medal fight. She ended up getting it moved to the King's Cup. This was happening at the same time as the World Championships, just because she was landing so many 12-6 flying elbows on girls. They'd never seen it from a woman before.
Yeah. And she was going crazy.
Yeah. I mean, literally just flying with just across the ring, just chopping girls down with 12-6 elbows.
Her performance, that was like 09?
Yeah, 09.
That performance on that, she just run through girls. Yeah. Like, scary.
And that 12-6 elbow. Yeah. It's no more dangerous. The most dangerous elbow in all of combat sports is the spinning elbow. That's the most dangerous elbow.
That one that you landed. How the fuck could a 12-6 elbow be more powerful than that?
There's no more dangerous elbow. Tyler Toner, the kid that he landed it on first, Dwayne's kid, he is a shooto veteran. He's a UFC veteran.
Broke his orbital.
He retired him. He never fought again.
Wow. Yeah.
His eye started to sink into his
cheek. They had to put a plate on the bottom because...
Yeah, the broken orbital is so weird because oftentimes it changed the way the eye looks.
Yeah.
Like, you remember when Bob Sapp?
Well, I think he has a lazy eye now.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, Krokop broke Bob Sapp's eyeball. Like, he punched his eyeball through the back of his head where the orbital, you know, there's a hole, right, where the eyeball sits. Like, you see that thing?
Yeah.
He was fractured behind it. And so now Bob's got one eye that's big and one eye that's little from getting tagged by Krokop.
The 12-6 elbow has no more effect than any other.
And that was a straight left hand with kickboxing gloves on. That's how hard Krokop hits.
Yeah.
Think about that shit.
Yeah.
He was a bad dude, man.
Yeah, he was a bad motherfucker. And still is.
Yeah.
And the thing, though, is that it just doesn't make any sense to me that like here's one that people are trying to say that should be banned, the side kick to the knee or the oblique kick to the knee. Why would you ban that when you don't ban heel hooks? Like, that seems crazy to me. Why would you ban that when you don't ban wheel kicks?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to literally bounce your heel off someone's head when you're spinning your body around like a top and you have unbelievable power. Like a wheel kick. Like, remember that when Terry Adam got knocked out by Edson Barboza?
Oh my God. He froze in the air and just dropped.
It was literally like someone hit his switch.
That might be the best spinning kick I've seen.
It was the first ever wheel kick KO in the UFC. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've had a few since then, but it's just such a crazy technique. Yeah, you got that?
Yeah.
Here it is. Watch this.
He froze.
And you put on the commentary.
And risk getting knocked out.
I was literally saying, take a chance and risk getting knocked out, and Terry Adam got knocked out.
He's frozen.
Yeah. I mean, that shit was perfect.
Barboza, man, that's a bad dude.
He's a bad motherfucker.
One of my favorite fights of him was when he fought Anthony Njokuani.
Oh,
that was a badass fight, man.
That was a great fight.
I think that's my favorite stand-up fight I've seen.
Well, Njokuani is such a great kickboxer himself. Yeah. Just Muay Thai fighter himself.
That's what he's doing now. His last fight was Muay Thai.
So he's all Muay Thai now? Is what he's doing now?
Yeah. He won the triumphant title.
Is his brother Muay Thai fighting as well?
No, his brother's in Bellator.
Chidi's doing... I think
Chidi might be in that tournament.
Is he?
Is he? Is he? I don't know.
I don't know. No,
Chidi signed with Bellator.
No, but he's not making 170 anymore.
No.
He's fighting 185.
Is Bellator doing Michael Page versus Semtex, Paul Daly? Are they going to do that?
Yeah, they're doing it. They're doing, and then they're in opposite brackets of Musasi and...
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Bellator reveals welterweight tournament bracket, including Michael Page versus Paul Daly. So Page versus Daly's on one side.
They're on this side, yeah.
Is Musasi going to fight at 170? Wait a minute. That's not real, right? Mm-hmm. Musasi's fighting 170? No.
Rory's going up to fight Musasi.
This is just announced today.
Okay.
This is so Rory and Musasi separate.
This is the welterweight Grand Prix.
Musasi's a big 185er.
Make that larger again so I can see what this... This is really strange. So what they're doing is they're going to do Rory McDonald is staying
champ versus
inside.
Champ.
Yeah. So Rory McDonald is staying in this welterweight Grand Prix as well as being
he's
a part
fighting,
of the super fight.
Yeah, but he's doing the super fight September 29th.
Then Lorenz Larkin's still in the mix too.
He's an alternate.
He's a beast, man. Yeah. Lorenz Larkin is a fucking beast. You know, I mean, he lost to Lima and then he got stopped by Daly, but that
guy's
still
monster.
He's a
scary.
Monster. And Koroshkov, man, look, did you see that spinning back kick that Koroshkov landed?
Yeah.
He literally sent that dude flying through the air.
Yeah, that was I fought on that card, but
fuck,
earlier, right?
Yeah. That was crazy.
Yeah.
And Douglas Lima looks like a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Looks like a heavyweight. Like, you're like, how the fuck is that guy 170? He's got to be one of the bigger weight cutters in the sport, right?
Absolutely.
See, this is what I'm thinking when I'm looking at this. I'm like, this is a really good tournament. Like, Bellator is getting really close. When you got Lima, who's world-class, Koroshkov, world-class. We saw that when he fought Benson Henderson for sure, right? But Lima stopped him.
Yeah.
And then you got Paul Daly, who literally can stop anybody. That motherfucker lands that left hand. He can put anybody to sleep.
Yeah.
He knocked out
Page.
Larkin. Yeah.
That's going to be a banger.
Fuck yeah. And Rory McDonald, who shut Paul Daly down,
yeah.
You know, and also beat Lima. And then you got John Fitch, who seems reborn, you know, after he beat Paul Daly. Very interesting, right?
It's a good tournament.
Plus, very little drug testing.
Well, we're California-based, Joe. We don't know about all that.
Yeah.
We got CSAC.
Fuck, man. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. But it's fascinating. You see the difference between guys in the early days of the UFC when it was the Wild West versus now. I mean, bodies have changed.
Yeah.
Careers have taken different paths.
Yeah, listen, I'm a fan. If it's not legal, then it should all be illegal, and I'm a fan of USADA. They visit my gym. So many poor Alexis has been tested.
Alexis
so
get tested like in 2 months. I think they came what four times.
I think
why
she's
test her so much.
I don't know.
Rumors?
I don't know.
Do they operate on rumors?
No. Alexis, if you look at Alexis Davis, she's not someone that somebody thinks.
No, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like that's why.
I think
weird.
It's just because the USADA rep is very active in that area.
Yeah.
So like she's come. She's tested Todd, she's tested Dustin, she's tested Alexis a lot.
Mm-hmm. Todd,
Todd Duffy.
Yeah.
She's tested a lot.
Oh, so well, Todd Duffy was on testosterone replacement at one point in time.
Before my time, I believe so.
Well, he was when he was like 25.
He wasn't in the gym then.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. He's been with me now for like the past year. I renegotiated his UFC agreement.
I love Todd.
He was
great guy.
Todd as a heavyweight was fighting for like 10-10. Before I renegotiated his deal. But he just had shoulder surgery and he just had knee surgery. So we're hoping to get him back.
He has knee surgery?
Yeah, last week.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Shoulder surgery and knee surgery.
He had shoulder surgery like 6 months ago. Yeah.
He's still young, though, right?
Yeah,
what is
he is.
32?
Yeah, he's not that old. Yeah. I think mentally he thinks he's
Todd.
Older than he is.
Such a good
he's
guy.
A good dude.
Yeah. As a heavyweight, I can, in him being a heavyweight, me being a featherweight, we can train together and spar.
Yeah.
And he's just so controlled and so good and so
that's
quick.
Awesome.
So quick for a heavyweight.
Yeah, we don't spar hard.
Yeah.
We really don't.
Yeah. You don't?
No.
We don't. Not at all.
No.
Hardest I sparred for my last fight was probably when Cody came down or when I went up there. That was twice in
no,
2 months.
No, we don't. We don't.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
I don't spar hard.
That is so fucking smart, and I love hearing that because I just feel like so many fighters make that mistake.
Yeah. Well, you come from a boxing background. You spar like 3 days a week, at least two.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you're going as hard as you can, and then kickboxing, Thais, they don't spar that hard. People go, oh well, they're done fighting or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that with all of the weapons that you have in MMA and all the weapons that you have in Thai boxing, you're sparring hard with those weapons. The chance of injury is
gigantic,
through the roof.
If you're throwing spinning elbows and training, It's yeah. full clip.
I can show.
Well, see,
it.
And I use him as the example because other people come. Well, coach, if I don't throw this hard, how am I going to know that I can land it in a fight hard? Well, Gaston's never put anybody down with a spinning elbow in the gym, and he can land it in a fight. Yeah. It's bullshit.
And I can land. Yeah. I can show it really well, like in the gym, like to the point that I'm like right there.
Right, right.
And I just stop him, like. Good I just, you, I just, man. I just raised my hand. And I'm like, that would have been it.
Yeah. And most people, well, and most people agree.
Training like that.
Yeah, no, we've never been a hard sparring.
It's one of the more
ever.
Controversial debates, right? Whether or not you should spar hard.
It's not
some
really
people think you have to.
Absolutely some people.
Faraz thinks you have to.
I disagree with Faraz. I disagree. I listened to the interview.
He was hiring people to try to knock out George.
Yes, I get that, and I understand it. I don't agree with it. I just don't. The human body is fragile, man. Mm-hmm. The brain is fragile. You cannot condition an organ.
Right, but how could you argue with his success rate? I mean, it's really interesting. It's like he's look, AKA, who the fuck spars harder than AKA? No. Those guys are animals.
Yep. Yeah.
They go at each other. But look, Luke Rockhold, world champ.
Yep.
Daniel Cormier, world champ. Cain Velasquez, world champ. Mm-hmm. Khabib Nurmagomedov, world champ.
Yeah.
And a fucking litany of assassins just waiting in the wings.
Yeah. In my opinion, succeeding in spite of, not because of.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it's certainly a debate, and your opinion is very well respected. And I am on your side. I like the idea of – I think you know how to fight. And what you're really doing is sharpening up your reaction times and your techniques and ingraining those paths, right? You're ingraining those reaction paths. And I don't necessarily think that the way to do that is to go full clip. But I think oftentimes when you do that, it actually makes you have less options inside the cage because you're so like wound up and tight. And when you're sparring 100%. That way, you're fighting.
Didn't Robbie Lawler stop sparring for a while?
He stopped sparring for like 7 years.
I mean, you develop. Yeah. When, I have people that come to the gym, and again, when it comes to stand up only, you know, I'll put our record and our people against anybody in North America, and we don't spar hard. And I get people that come to the gym all the time, coming from a hard sparring background, and they are missing weapons, they are missing tools, they are in fight or flight mode right away. You are developing that sniper, bite down on your mouthpiece attitude, which is one attribute of fighting. Sometimes you do need to bite down on your mouthpiece, but it doesn't work out for at least one of the two people doing it in a fight.
Yeah, I like what you just said. It's one attribute of fighting.
Absolutely.
And it is one. I mean, you can't deny that it is one, but it is only one. And technical proficiency is the most important.
Yeah, being able to, you know, throw jabs, establish probes, use fakes and feints, movement, and being defensively sound.
And have that incredible variable repertoire, that toolbox.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things you saw in the fight with Cody versus TJ. TJ had a bigger toolbox, you know, in terms of his movement. I mean, he was more fluid while he was doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately proved to be what was most important in that fight.
Yeah. I'll 100% go to the grave believing that Cody is a far better boxer than TJ. That didn't translate into an MMA fight on Saturday night for whatever reason, you know, whether it's anger, whether it was the last fight, whether it was game plan, lack of coaching, whatever it was, 100%, I believe that, you know, Cody did not show who or what he is that
night. Have you worked with Cody?
No.
Would you want to?
Sure. I'll work with anybody that has a good attitude and is willing to embrace my way of doing things.
Because I think he's a very talented guy, and I think he could really benefit from training with someone like you.
I think that the relationship that we're developing with Alpha Male, they got a ton of great guys there, is a good one. But I'm careful not to overstep my bounds.
Right, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Don't say, "Hey, I could fix you."
No,
come on over here, kid.
No,
that's shit.
No, yeah, I wouldn't do that. The guys there that want to work with me, I happily work with, and they allow my guys to go up there and wrestle, which is what we need.
Right.
So it's been a good fit, but I would never poach anybody.
Good for you, man. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah, that's you don't want that bad blood.
No,
you don't want that bad juju on you.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So what, going forward with your camp and with your career, what are you guys doing now that's different than you have done in the past? Have you added anything in terms of strength and conditioning or recovery or anything that you find really beneficial?
Strength and conditioning has always been something that we've done really well. For us, you know, recently over the last couple of years, you know, we added Darren. I think is really kind of the
Darren who
you and Yama. I know, a million people listening.
Yeah.
But the Bone Crusher, we've added the Bone Crusher. He's our head MMA coach. Yeah. I'm his striking coach. But what he's brought to the table
for
us.
He's got a fun Instagram to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Apparently, he likes guns.
Yeah, yeah. He does. He does.
Just such an incredible IQ when it comes to fighting and MMA. So much knowledge and so many things. Like sometimes you can agree. Like sometimes you click with people, and like that's what happens between me and him. I only like rolling with him really, because he'll get me in positions that mm-hmm. I'm gonna probably be in the fight, but he'll like walk me through them
right
at the same time versus yeah. like just like ah oh, like it's
right.
different.
The learning curve for a striker, they're two different languages, right? That's why the grapplers have trouble striking, the strikers have trouble grappling. Someone like Darren who can do both, that can take a kid like Gaston and can walk him through the positions, the right choices, mm-hmm. the wrong choices in the moment while he's doing it is mm-hmm. very rare that I have found. And Darren, you know, again, he's Half Gracie black belt, FILA world champion, but he started out working the front desk at Fairtex. So he's been around grappling. Alex Gong is his idol. You yeah. know, that's his brother from another, you know, I mean, so, you know, we checked off bucket list for Darren, and he's done two Muay Thai fights at a pro level now. You know, just pro Muay Thai, and he's done well.
Yeah, I've been following that.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch.
And it's one of those things where he wants to shoot boxing now, and wants to go back to Japan, and whatever he wants to do, I'm going to support him in. But his knowledge of the entire MMA game has helped our gym so much and our fight team. I mean, I think in the UFC, our win rate is like 78%. You know, Matt, Dustin, Alexis, all these people came to us off of losing records. You know, yeah. they had, you know, Dustin lost two in a row. He's about to get cut. Yeah. Matt lost three in a row. Alexis had lost two in a row. We have a lot of people.
Dustin looked fantastic in his last fight.
Dustin,
that head kick yeah. came out of nowhere. Yeah. What a crazy angle.
Yeah.
And the hand was up and yeah. everything. And still it just went through.
Went through the hand. Yeah. So it's also the angle was yeah. like, it was like a 45 degree head kick.
Well, yeah. Dustin's flexibility isn't that great. So that's the kick we work on.
Yeah.
He can't turn it over the
Why
same
not have
way.
Him stretch? Yeah.
Well, he does, but absolutely. But from a flexibility standpoint,
yeah. he's been doing that for so long.
He can throw that yeah. kick the way he throws it, so we embraced it mm-hmm. because it's kind of like an off-speed pitch almost.
Yes, that's yeah. you know.
It
what?
Seemed like he like slowed it down and then boom, picked
that
it up
again.
That
is exactly what Mark Del Grotte yeah. said. That's yeah. exactly what he said when he yeah. described it.
Yeah,
we talked about it the other day.
Yeah. So and again, that's why you know we talk about people switching. Like you know when we talk about Mateus, his opponent, I don't remember his last name. You know, we knew what a great boxer he was, but whenever he went southpaw, he didn't do anything southpaw.
Didn't Dustin do some work with that sand dune stepper thing?
He does
thing?
All the time.
All the time.
He does all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
I've got that thing here now.
Yeah, no, Dustin swears by it. He loves that thing. He's on it every day.
That is a crazy, for people that don't know what it is, they sent me one. The sand dune stepper is like these two really smushy pads mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. are together. And it's great for, it's almost like standing on a stability ball.
Right.
Like you stand on them and they're all mushy and you got to kind of use all your stabilizing muscles.
I've never used it.
Yeah. Use it right here, man.
Dustin runs, Dustin runs on it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, he just sprints on it.
Just does left, right, left, right, left, right. Yeah.
All day long. And he does upper body, too.
And he correct me if I'm wrong, he had, like, some ankle issues, and that corrected it for him?
Yes. 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 Yeah. So, no, he's somebody who, you know, literally, like we talk about my gym, Dustin showed up one day. He didn't even call me. It was before the Makovsky fight. He showed up in my gym one day and started taking classes. I didn't even know who he was.
Wow.
I had no idea who he was.
Well, he had come... And like 2 years before that.
Right.
When he was with Duke.
When he was with Duke, he came in and visited, did a class. Then he came back in and did a class. And I was like, is he still with UFC? And he's like, yeah, I got a fight coming up. And he said, will you train me? And I said, sure. And I said, that's fine. So we trained him for it. I was actually in Italy with Kevin for Bellator. Gaston's the one that cornered him when he fought Makovsky.
I saw you out there in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah, that first fight. And literally that first camp, he and I didn't do a single pad session. All he did was classes.
Wow.
That was it. Mm-hmm. Right, that's how humble he is. He didn't come in, I'm a UFC guy, I'm this and that. Yeah. And that's what I'm looking for.
Him and I worked a little bit. We did a little, because I was going to corner him.
Yeah.
Kieran obviously knew he was going to be cornering Kevin. So I went up there with him. So we started working a little bit together. But he's such a great guy, man. Good vibes from Dustin Ortiz.
Yeah, he seems like a really great guy. Yeah.
And he's got like six goddamn lungs. Like he'll just never get tired. He's one of those guys. He's a 125er. I'm a featherweight, but... Yeah. you can spar like 20 rounds with that guy, and he will not stop coming at you.
Yeah.
Well, with this win this past weekend when Cejudo beat DJ, that weight class just opened wide up.
I mean, yeah.
That's what happens when something like that happens. It happened when Chris Weidman beat Anderson Silva, when the undefeatable champion gets beaten, and all of a sudden contenders will rise.
Yeah.
And so this is an interesting time for everybody at 125. It's just such a hard weight class to find elite fighters in.
Yeah,
and you know, I've talked to Bellator about it because I've had other people out, and they have no interest in it, none.
No interest in 25?
Nope.
Yeah.
No, they're debating how long they want to keep 35.
Really?
Yeah.
You know. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But they don't do women in kickboxing under 125. You know, they won't go near it, and they don't do women over 145, and they don't want any men. They don't have any men. You've never seen a man kickbox for Bellator less than 145 pounds.
Yeah.
It's never happened.
Is that because they're worried about power?
I think they're just worried about marketability, really.
Right, yeah. But that's the thing is, like, the bigger people hit harder.
It's
kind of more exciting to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, listen, gentlemen, this has been fun.
It's always fun. It's fun this time. I didn't talk last time. I got a lot of shit for not talking last time.
You talked a little.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
People, who gave you shit?
Just everybody. Oh, I want you to talk. I'm like,
tell him to shut the fuck up.
I did. It wasn't about me. It was about Kevin and Gaston.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Yeah, and listen, I think what you're doing is really awesome. I love the fact that you're competing in three different sports, and the fact that you're doing it at the highest level. It's it's really inspiring, and it's interesting, and it's very compelling, you know, and you're doing it in an awesome way.
Yeah, well, it's cool. Thank you very much, man. I plan on keep doing it, and I want for as long as I can until I just go solely into MMA. But yeah, man, I'm having fun. I love fighting. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, so I like to stay busy. Yeah. So anything that I can do, if I can do Muay Thai, if I can do kickboxing, if I can do MMA, I'll do it all, man.
And CSA Gym on Instagram. It's just CSA Gym, correct?
It's at CSA Gym Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
And Dream Killer
_ Bolanos.
And spell Bolanos for
Bolanos.
All right, beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Fun.
Thank you.